call the meeting to order. We've got, we believe, 10 and a half members with Representative Anderson's junior assistant here to help us get underway. Representative David, to move the minutes of the March 24th meeting. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Seeing none, that motion carries. Representative Abler, welcome to the committee. Representative David, we'll move House File 1345. Be recommended pass and refer to the General Register. It's my understanding that there is an author's amendment or two.
That's correct, Mr. Chair.
And Representative David, do you have the amendments that you desire to offer?
Yes, Mr. Chairman. I would first offer the H13-4584 amendment, Mr. Chairman.
And Mr. Chair, if Representative David would offer to delete lines 1.8 till the end, that would be really nice too.
Mr. Chairman, I would move to delete 1.8 to the end.
And then if you would like to offer the A6 amendment to put the bill in order, we'll be talking about it.
I think we should vote on the first one. Okay. I mean, I like the pace at which you're moving, Representative. That's why you get to go first on the agenda. But we've got the H13-4584 amendment with the deletion from line 1.8 on. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Seeing none, that motion prevails. The next amendment, Representative Abler, that puts it in the position that you'd like to proceed with it would be the A...
Oh, Mr. Chair, I'm sorry, I made an error. It's 1.6 and following, so maybe you can just get the revote on that to take out the last 2 lines.
We'll move to reconsider it. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. That motion carries. Representative Davids then will change his motion that we adopt the 13-4584 amendment and delete from line 1.6 on.
So
all in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Seeing none, that motion prevails. The second amendment to put it in the shape that the author desires to proceed is the A, that's the sixth amendment. Representative David to move the A6 amendment. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Seeing none, that motion prevails. Representative Abler, to your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I, in the interest of your long schedule, I'll be brief, but I want to point out that there's some problems. This is actually a provider bill. I've been talking to the plans and the reason for all the amendments, and there will be more coming in the future, I forget, is that there's a, find my bill. There's a couple issues that this talks about, one of which is this, the freedom to bill and having enough time to bill as a provider. The statute that has been passed in the past law is 180 days for a provider to bill a plan. Many contracts have shrunk that down to 90 days or less. This bill will create a floor at no less than 90. And the part of the problem is it says by statute, by contract. You guys know more about contracts than I do, except when I get a contract from one of the plans, it looks about like this. And if I want to change a word, they say, well, you don't get a contract, and so it's not a free deal. And the only people who really negotiate would be the Mayo Clinic, Alina, and some of the other big plans. And that's a problem. And so this attempt at least established a floor at 90, which is eroding even from that. The second part has to do with the clearinghouses. And if you submit a bill through a clearinghouse, which will have to happen after July 15th to all the bills submitted in the state, and you don't know that it didn't get there, if the data went to data heaven and just kind of vaporized, you may not know that for a month and a half because of the way the billing practices go. If you only have 90 days to bill, by the time you get it figured out, you may have lost the time to bill. And so this simply, the second part of the bill allows that if you send a bill in good faith to your clearinghouse, and it's a, you know, a real one, that the time is has the time standard has been met, and so you had a chance to bill for what you got, and that's the part on page 4. There's another part that's very important. You have a handout, and this is on page 3, lines 324 to 30, which has to do with a practice that's just come new to us. You have this handout here. There's a certain company whose initials are on the top up there. Federated has a patient. This is actually my patient here. I crossed his name off, so you don't know who he is. But came and saw me. We did 2 charges that were worth $150. The Federated fee schedule allowed $97, which is about the usual rate. And then Preferred One subbed out to HSM to do the work. HSM has contracted with me for a $64 rate, which is also how it goes in the non-negotiated world of real contracting. But the difference is that the $97 was to go to the patient deductible. HSM allowed me $64, and so recouped $33 of that from the check. I know you are concerned about administrative overhead and all, but 35% as a bonus to the middleman seems like a lot to me, and the patient should benefit by that. Curiously enough, in this situation, this went to deductible, so I probably never got the $97 from the person because they weren't very well off. And so for the benefit of, for me seeing this patient in person, I lost $33, which isn't the intent. You have to do a lot of patients to make any money at that, Mr. Chair, if you're losing $33 a head. And I know margins are lean.
You make it up in volume, don't you, Representative?
And so the paragraph A at 324 says that if there's a lower price, the patient gets the price, and not the middleman, and not the provider either, for that matter. And the second part is that if they... if they're going to recoup, they have to be sure that you got the money. And so, Mr. Chair, that's the basic part of the bill. The amendment you put on cleaned up a little bit of the language. And I don't know if Lynn wants to come down and tell us that we're still working on this. The part that's very controversial to the plans is Section 3, and that has to do with this post-payment audit phenomenon. And by contract, they said they had 15 months to go back, but I have reports that it's back as long as 3 years or longer. And this is really an issue. And I don't know if we'll solve it in this bill, but we're going to begin to address part of it. You may hear more about it in years to come. But the recoupments that come on are sometimes in the six digits after 4 years, and no group that I know has the capacity to deal with that. Sitting with Lynn and some of her senior staff today, this is the amendment that she wrote, and I'll let her talk about it.
Ms. Nelson, welcome to the committee.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'm Lynn Nelson from Blue Cross Blue Shield of Minnesota, and we have been working with Representative Abler on this language, and I appreciate him taking this amendment. And it basically clarifies a couple of things and allows us to go back for fraudulent activity, segregation, or coordination of benefits, which typically may take longer than 6 months or take longer than 3 months. So it just allows us a little bit more time and a couple more clarification. I'm not going to go through the full amendment right now, but I wanted to say that.
Thank you.
And Mr. Chair, I expect more meetings through March and April. And this is a work in progress, but I think we appreciate them coming to talk to me, and I think we're going to get something accomplished this session. So that's your bill, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Abler. And there's my understanding there is another amendment that Representative Davids has, the A5 amendment. Do you desire to offer that, Representative Davids?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'd like to offer the H1345A5 amendment.
Okay. You want to speak to that briefly? And it's my understanding the author is okay with that amendment. Is that right?
It's a friendly amendment.
Okay. Representative Davids to that amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Basically, what I'm doing here is in law right now, and correct me if I'm wrong, Mr. Pender or Representative Abler, if you have a sole proprietor or an individually owned professional practice, such as a veterinarian, a doctor, a chiropractor, and others, if there's a death, under current law, the surviving spouse, I believe, has 90 days to sell that practice. Well, there's a little problem there, because what will happen is other folks that might want to buy that practice wait till the 91st day, and if it's not sold by then, it drives the price right down real fast. But what this amendment would do is it would put it out to a year, and then after that year, then they'd have 90 days from the year, or is it 90 days total?
It's a year total.
It's a year total. Okay, Representative David.
And it takes a long time to say that.
Okay, on page 4, I guess the substance here is page 4, 4.17, subdivision 4, 1 year period for surviving spouse of the sole owner for purposes of the section each mention of 90 days or 90-day period or similar term shall be interpreted as 1 year after the death of a professional right on there. So I guess it's the 1 year. What happened in my district, I had a constituent that owned the veterinary clinic, and the veterinarian passed away, and the spouse was forced to sell at a reduced price because of the 90-day rule. I just believe that if we do, and I can't really see any reasoning to keep it at 90 days, so we'd like to put that out, or I'd like to put that out to a year so that there's some time for some negotiation. And obviously, the spouse, if they're not licensed, cannot practice there, but they could hire someone to continue the business and add some value to that investment that they have.
Thank you, Representative David. I understand the author is supportive of it. The chair is supportive of it. Is there any other discussion or questions relative to it? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Seeing none, the A5 amendment is adopted. Is there further discussion or questions? If not, Representative David will renew his motion that House File 1345 is amended to be recommended passed and re-referred to the General Register. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Seeing none, that motion prevails.
Thank you, Representative Members. I really appreciate it.
Representative Rukavina is up there. Stand up. I'm sorry. Representative Rukavina. you should hear what he does to me in his committee.
When you said we have 10.5 members, I thought you were referring to me in his committee.
Oh, you're a full three quarters, Representative Rukavina. The chair will move that the division report for House File 1169 be adopted. All in favor, say aye. Any opposed, seeing none, that motion prevails. The chair will then move that House File 1169 be recommended pass and referred to the General Register. Representative Rukavina, your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. The bill says that in the states or its political subsidiaries that any wearing apparel required by as a uniform or safety equipment that it needs to be purchased by an employee, that it should be made in the United States of America, and then it requires a livable wage, Mr. Chair, and I believe you have a letter of support from Unite Here in the packet, and I'm just continuing on my theme of trying to get manufacturing and that back in the United States of America. So that's the bill.
Thank you, Representative Rukavina. We've got some folks that would like to testify, and then we'll take questions and comments from members of the committee. First up, I've got Jim Rhodes. The next in line is Ken Allen. Welcome back, Mr. Rhodes.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. And Jim Rhodes, Department of Administration. We do the procurement, as you know, for the state contract. The question comes up about, we have contracts that are in force that will go after the enactment date, and there could be some cost. Our concern is there could be some cost to having to cancel the contracts that are involved with the different vendors. So we thought we should at least raise the issue to you and to Representative Rukavina so he would be aware of it. And these are, most of them are Minnesota companies, by the way. We have others that have to be rebid, which may mean that there could be an added cost to different things. We're talking uniform accessories for different parts of the Department of Natural Resources, State Patrol, the Department of Corrections does some clothing and accessories, but more accessories than clothing, I believe. And there's also uniforms for cleaning for the Department of MnDOT and that type of thing. So we bring that as a concern that it presents the problem and could actually add some cost to the bill that we're unforeseen.
Thank you, Mr. Rhodes. Next up I have Mr. Allen and then Ms. Wynn, I believe, from the League of Minnesota City. Mr. Allen, welcome to the committee. Just identify yourself. Proceed.
Thank you. My name is Ken Allen. I'm the Materials Management Division Director in the Department of Administration. Mr. Rhodes essentially expressed the issues that we've been talking about within administration. So unless somebody has specific questions about the state contracts that would be affected, I don't have anything to add to what Mr. Rhodes told you.
Very good. Thank you, Mr. Allen. And Ms. Wynn, welcome to the committee.
Hello, I'm Wayne Nguyen with the League of Minnesota Cities. We would just like to respectfully express some of the concerns that we have regarding this bill. This bill, we do believe, creates yet another mandate on Minnesota cities, and complying with provisions of the bill could cause considerable overhead for our cities. It's not clear how cities are supposed to identify the manufacturers and if they comply with the living wage preference in this bill. And we're not sure if it is the expectation of all 855 cities to have to research and contact the companies individually to make sure that the product is manufactured and they do pay a prevailing wage. Currently, there is no easy way for Minnesota cities to do this. And we just wanted to also mention that there's a bill moving through the process that requires cities to purchase through the state's cooperative purchasing plan. And we have questions whether or not that the current state cooperative purchasing program actually complies with the provisions of this bill. If this body does decide to move forward with the bill, we would kindly request that the author consider some type of waiver that could be given to cities that if we did try to identify a manufacturer and we could not identify one, that a waiver could be given to cities, and that possibly that the state or a state agency could help identify the manufacturers first for cities, so that cities would have somewhere that they could go to easily identify the company. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Nguyen. We appreciate your constructive comments. Is there anyone else that desires to testify with respect to the bill at this time? We have questions. Representative Hoppe.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have a question for the League of Minnesota Cities. How are your member cities doing on the verification process of making sure that every American flag is American manufactured?
I would say that there are probably fewer companies that manufacture American flags than there are companies that manufacture apparel or security type of devices. So I think it would be a little bit easier for our cities to identify those companies.
Thank you, Ms. Lynn. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to make sure the verification process was in place.
Thank you, Representative Hoppe. We appreciate that. Are there other comments or questions? If not, the Chair will renew his motion that House File 1169 be recommended pass and refer to the General Register. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed?
No.
Motion prevails. Thank you, Representative Rukavina. Next up is Representative Mullery's bill. 448. Representative Mullery will move that House File 448 be recommended to pass and referred to the General Register.
Yes, Mr.
It's my understanding, though, that we've got a division report. Representative Johnson will move the division report. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Seeing none, that motion prevails. We'll then move to the bill. Representative Mullery.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And this is a real simple one, and it's been to committees I didn't even know the name of. It simply says that when the 9/11 system, when there's a call in for emergency, that they can include, if they want, the local system would be up to them to refer to the mental health crisis teams, which we have around the state. Every county, I believe, has them. They aren't all on call all 24 hours, but they are everywhere. And there's so many situations, whether it be the ones that we see the most extensive, not as many times, but which make the papers, are where there's a challenge, somebody's doing something and the police are there and they don't have the ability to understand what's happening, and so they get in a crisis team. There's also, obviously, police and fire are not trained how to deal with these situations. And today we have Sue Aberholdem, the head of the National Alliance on Mental Illness in Minnesota.
Thank you, Representative Mullery. Are you aware of any opposition
nope.
to the bill, or is anyone here to testify in opposition to the bill?
Nobody's opposed it in all the other committees.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative David.
I'm in full support of this bill. I think it's a fine piece of legislation. I hope this committee will follow me and pass this bill.
And Mr. Chairman, I don't have any more, expensive props like I did.
I was
going to
say you didn't even pile any pens or pencils on the table this time, Representative Mullery. Ms. Admiral, you're welcome to testify. It doesn't look like you can do anything but mess it up, though. I mean, it's.
Mr. Chairman, I saw the whole list didn't have to hear yesterday, so that's fine.
All right. Well, with that, Representative Mullery will renew his motion that House File is 448.
Yeah.
Be recommended pass and refer to the General Register. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Seeing none, that motion prevails. Thank you very much. Representative Simon, are you ready for the... then we'll be going to Representative Thiessen next. I see that he joined us. We've got Representative Simon's bill on this multi-page agenda, which is House File 1823. Representative Simon will move that House File 1823... be recommended pass and refer to the General Register. Representative Simon, your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. We live in a great country where the Jewish guy from St. Louis Park can carry a bill for the Lutherans. So I'm very proud to do so. And all this bill does, it shouldn't be controversial, I know of no opposition. It says that a church benefits board can act as a trustee of a trust. It's embedded, it's been shopped around, and we know of no opposition to it. But to explain further or to answer any questions, I have Bob Ridland with me, and he's available for questions if members have the questions.
Then I'll do the same thing I did on the last bill. Is there anybody here to testify in opposition to this bill? All right, Mr. Ridland, you're welcome to testify. But
no, I thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank the committee for giving me the opportunity, but I don't think it needs to take more of your time.
All right, well, thank you very much. Are there questions or concerns from members of the committee?
I'm Catholic. How do I vote?
In a guilty fa- So am I, Representative Hoppe. Representative Simon will renew his motion to House File 1823 be recommended passed and refer to the General Register. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Seeing none, that motion prevails. Representative Thiessen, I heard you were in the room. Where are you? Come on down. thank you for joining us. We've got Representative Kiesemsville is House File 42, which is temporary Minnesota care eligibility provided for certain individuals. The chair will move that House File 42 be recommended pass and referred to the Committee on Finance with a recommended re-referral to the Committee on Health and Human Services Finance. Representative Thiessen, it's my understanding there is an amendment or two?
Two amendments, I think, Mr.
We've
Chair.
Got and both are author's amendments,
right.
Correct?
The first is the lead-out, which actually there's a committee engrossment, but because of the way we got to this committee, it's not a real engrossment, so we're going to just put the committee engrossment on as a real amendment.
Okay, and that is the DE-5.
That's the DE-5.
All right, the chair will move the DE-5, put it in the shape in which the author desires to proceed. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, seeing none, that motion prevails. The next step is the A7 amendment. That's also an author's amendment.
That's correct, Mr. Chair, and that does makes a fix for federal law, which I think the chair is actually carrying as an independent bill as well, but it fits in with this.
It's a terrific idea. The chair will move the A7 amendment, which is an author's amendment. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, seeing none, that motion prevails. Representative Thiessen, your bill.
I think we're here just on the first section of the bill, which has to do with what the bill does basically is it provides some targeted relief for people that are laid off. It allows them to get onto Minnesota care a little bit more quickly. One of the provision that is in section one doesn't allow denial for pre-existing conditions for people that come through this program, which would be a small group, and it tries to parallel what would happen if you actually got COBRA coverage. You don't get denied for pre-existing conditions to get onto COBRA. I don't think that there'll be any adverse selection because it is such a small and random group that would make it through the process to get there. I don't know if anybody is here to testify about it, but that's what the provision does. So it just allows people, how the program works, they get 4.5 months of Minnesota care under this program. It's kind of a temporary relief to bridge them through finding another alternative to insurance. And if they can't qualify for Minnesota care after that period of time and they go in the private market, we'd like them to be able to buy into a private market program. And that's what this provision would do.
Okay. Thank you, Representative Thiessen. I should ask, is there anybody here to testify one way or the other with respect to the bill? All right, questions from members of the committee? Representative Hoppe.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Thiessen, I know you were just talking about private groups, and I know the intention, but do you think it's possible that there are any, albeit small, are there any groups of private insurance or people that would have private insurance that might drop that and go on to this plan?
Mr. Chair, I don't think so because of the I mean that's unrelated to the piece that's here, but I don't think so because this is people that lose their coverage when they lose their job, and there's some fairly strict criteria about how you could again. There may be people that would choose to go on to this instead of trying to buy private insurance, but again, these are people on unemployment that have $300 a week on average.
Representative Hoppe, anything further? Representative David, do you have a question or concern?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman and Representative Thiessen. I just want to hold on here a bit on this one. Okay, so somebody's employed, they look like they have group coverage, and then they're unemployed, they would go on a Minnesota care instead of COBRA?
No, there's a specific exclusion. If they qualify for COBRA, they need to go on to COBRA.
And Mr. Chairman, Representative Thiessen, if they don't qualify for COBRA, they can waive the 4-month waiting period on Minnesota care?
Yes, Mr. Chair, sorry, for 145 days, Representative Davis.
Okay, then, Mr. Chairman, Representative Thiessen, what happens then when that time's gone and they don't have a job and they don't have Minnesota care?
Mr. Chair, the idea here is during that 4-month period, they can either apply for real Minnesota care. By that time, the 4-month waiting period will have expired. So if they qualify for Minnesota care, they could do that. And if they don't qualify for Minnesota care, at least this gives them a chance to look around for other options.
Representative David,
Mr. Chairman.
Any other questions or concerns? If not, the chair will renew his motion that House File 42 as amended be recommended passed and referred to the Committee on Finance for the recommended re-referral to the Committee on Health and Human Services Finance. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Seeing none, that motion prevails. Thank you, Representative Thiessen. As long as you're there.
Do you want to do the other one?
Yeah.
Okay.
The chair will move the division report with respect to House File 458. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Seeing none, that motion prevails. The chair will then move that House File 458 be recommended passed and referred to the Committee on State and Local Government Operations Reform, Technology, and Elections. Representative Thiessen, your bill. It's my understanding, though, you do have an author's amendment.
I do, which hopefully will take care of that re-referral.
Okay.
So if you want...
Well, let's do that, and then we'll figure it out. We've got the A090280 amendment. It is an author's amendment. The chair will move it. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Seeing none, that motion prevails.
And what the amendment does, Mr. Chair, is it deletes Section 1, which is the advisory council. It deletes Section 4. So what we're left with in the bill is the definition section remains the same. And in Section 3, is largely the same. What it does is it makes and what Section 3 does basically is set up a process for toxic chemicals where the department, one of our agencies, Department of Health or Department of Natural Resources, will look at other states. And one thing the amendment does is also allow the Department of Health to look at to look at ideas coming originating in Minnesota, to assess them as possible new regulations and to make recommendations to the legislature about which makes sense for Minnesota and which doesn't. So it's trying to set up a process that will allow us to leverage the resources of other states, not giving up our jurisdiction to make decisions, but leverage the work that's going on in other states around this toxic chemical issue to make decisions about how we should regulate those toxic chemicals in products. It also includes language to allow us to participate in this clearinghouse. That's one of the things the amendment does of chemicals. And the other thing that it does, instead of having an advisory council, it will allow the department to consult with a peer review. Do you have the language? I don't have the amendment in front of me. I'm sorry.
Actually, I don't. And one of the special assistants run a copy of the amendment to
Representative Hoppe. He's on it.
So, thank you, special assistant Hoppe.
Thank you. For an external scientific peer review panel so that the department have discretion to consult with scientists about whether certain regulations make sense or not and whether the chemical analysis of the other states makes sense or not. And that essentially, Mr. Chair, is what the bill does. I mean, and I should acknowledge, and I'm assuming you're going to also take up Representative Sanu's bill relatively soon. I think the differences between the two bills, largely, I think they're coming very close, much closer together. The differences between the two bills is this bill does not include a listing of, listing of chemicals. The state would not do that. I think that's actually a good idea. But I just didn't get it included in this bill. And the other thing that I think Representative Knuth's bill is it requires manufacturers to report what's in their products if it's on this list that's compiled. And I think that's an issue worth more discussion. And I've been working with Representative Knuth going forward. And I would appreciate moving this bill forward, and we'll continue those discussions if that would be okay with the committee. But I'm open to questions.
Thank you, Representative Thiessen. And in fact, we're going to hear Representative Knuth's bill next.
Yes.
At one point, I think when the bills were introduced, I would have described them as somewhat competing in their approach. Now I don't know that they're necessarily complementary to one another, but they are moving closer to each other, and each seems to be picking up good ideas from the other, and that's a credit to the process. With that, are you aware of? I don't see any folks that have requested to testify with respect to the bill.
There was opposition in the prior committee raising concerns about one of the concerns was about an advisory council as opposed to having the department do it. That is taken care of by this amendment. Then there's also concern about the more general approach about whether we do a risk-based approach or a hazard-based approach. This bill doesn't take any particular, it's kind of agnostic to that. So some states that we'd look at take a hazard-based approach, others would take a risk-based approach, and the department and the panel, the scientific peer review panel, would just have to kind of sort that out.
Okay. And Representative Thiessen, and then just a logistical question. I'm comfortable moving it then to the general register in light of the amendment.
Right.
But have you actually spoken with Representative, I guess it would be Pawlowski?
I have not, but because we got rid of the advisory council and the expert panel is kind of a may, it's something that they can do. And in fact, the department does use the peer review scientific council advisory panels in other contexts. Like biomonitoring, I believe, is one example. I think I feel comfortable, and if if Representative Polsky wants to take it back in, I'll certainly refer it back.
Well, and I was, as long as you say that out loud, I appreciate that. We had Representative Knuth and then Representative Zeller. Representative Knuth?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Thiessen. I appreciate the work you're doing on this bill, and I'm sure we'll keep talking about it moving forward. But I'm just curious about the referral in terms of whether or not the agency having to do reports or reporting back to us would have any fiscal note, and if that's been requested. And I know my bill had to go through environment policy and health policy, and so I'm just wanting to get some clarification on the referral.
That's a fair question.
We can go to finance. Actually, that's a fair question. If you want to, it probably should be referred to finance. I think that's right.
With a recommended re-referral then to, would it be environment finance?
Yeah.
I look to represent Knuth because I think she's traveled this path already.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, I mean, I guess it's deadline day, but I did have to go through environment policy and also Representative Thiessen's committee. And so, you know, I'm happy to keep talking about it, but I do raise that concern.
And well, my policy has heard the health issues on Representative Knuth's bill. I don't think that there's any different particular health issues on this. If the referral needs to be, you know, to the environment committee, I think they heard the environment issues as well as it travels with representatives in itself.
You know what, I mean, this is, you know, it's a body of integrity, and I respect that if we move it to the general register and anybody seeks it, and actually I think it ought to go to finance with a recommended referral to environment finance.
Yeah.
But then if any of the other policy chairs want to see it, obviously you're not going to turn them down.
Right.
And you may then have to make a pit stop through the Rules Committee in order to avert the deadline issue. That's just the nature of the business. So that when we renew the motion, that will be the where it will be sent if there's votes to do that. Representative Zellers?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I think we were comfortable sending it to the general register, but that's... That's fine, and Representative Thiessen, I do think you're going in the right direction. It covered my ears when you said some of those things about listing chemicals and going through the process, because I think your bill is getting far better as it moves along. I encourage you to keep working, and I really do appreciate, since the last committee, using the clearinghouses and using data that's already been done, so we're not reinventing the wheel. We're not going to re-require all out of our agencies to do the work that hundreds of other workers have done on these, researchers have done on this work. So I think you're moving in the right direction. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Representative Zellers. Are there other questions, comments, anyone that desires to testify? If not, the Chair will renew his motion that House File 458 as amended be recommended to pass and referred to the Committee on Finance with a recommended re-referral to the Committee on Environmental Finance. So all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed?
Thank you.
Motion prevailed. Thank you, Representative Thiessen. Representative Knuth is House File 250. Are you ready to present that? We have the division report. Which, did this come out of Representative Dabney's division, I assume? The chair will move the division report. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Seeing none, that motion prevails. Representative Knuth will then move that House File 250 be recommended to pass and refer to the general register. It's my understanding, Representative Knuth, you have the...
Mr. Chair, this will have to go to the Finance Committee as well.
Everybody's skipping around. We thought we'd just send you to the general register. But all right, if you want to go to Finance, and with a recommended re-referral then to Environment Finance, is that right? Or to
Mr. Chair, I think it'll have to go to Representative Clarkson. I don't know the name of her committee.
Well, back to Mr. Chairman.
Representative Zellers?
I think it's actually going to have to go to Representative Mullery's committee next, because of the civil penalties in there as well.
Well, we'll see what the amendment does, and we'll have that discussion. So I appreciate that. And once we get to the renewal of the motion, we'll figure out exactly what we're doing with it. Representative Knuth, it's my understanding that you have an A4 amendment?
Yep.
And that's an author's amendment. The author will move the A4 amendment. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Seeing none, that motion prevails. Representative Knuth, to your bill as amended, and if you want during the discussion of it to talk about whether that civil law referral is the right place to go or not, we'd appreciate that.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. House File 250 is I think everyone agrees that we have a problem with Representative Thiessen's bill, and I think the agencies would agree with it, with toxic chemicals getting into our products and a lack of accountability and ability to do the job at the EPA. In your packets, you'll have the, you have a three-page document. It's a document from the Government Accountability Office. On their, and the, an assessment that came out just this month, or January, just this year, on toxic chemical regulation and what the EPA is doing. And just a couple highlights. The EPA lacks adequate scientific information on the toxicity of many chemicals that may be found in the environment, as well as tens of thousands of chemicals used commercially in the United States. They basically don't have the chance, the ability to do their job to protect both children and adults, Americans generally. Their assessment of dioxin has been underway for 18 years. I think we can all agree that dioxin has some problems associated with it. Their assessment for formaldehyde, trichloroethylene, and tetrachloroethylene has been under their, under review for over a decade. So what House File 250 does is take a comprehensive approach to chemical policy, and the first section is some definitions, and then it asks the, and the amendment changes it to the Department of Health to outline chemicals of high concern. These are chemicals that have been identified as being cancer-causing, endocrine-disrupting, reproductive toxins, developmental toxins, and it has the different scientifically relevant groups listed under that on page 2. The agency then would identify priority chemicals, which are chemicals that are found in our environment, in our homes, in human bodies and tissues, that are high volume, high production volume chemicals, so ones that we produce a lot of in the United States, or a chemical that's then prohibited in another state within the United States. The agency then will identify, they'll take a subset of priority chemicals and do, I'd say, five by January 1st, 2013, or 2011, and another five by 2013, and that's looking to see if there's safer alternatives for these priority chemicals, and we'll classify them as level one if there's a safer alternative, level two if there's not a safer alternative yet identified. And then what the amendment does, it actually deletes, and then section five asks the agency to, ask the pollution control agency to collect information on these level one and level two priority chemicals that the Department of Health has listed, and manufacturers will have to report back on which products this chemical is in, and then also if the agency asks for further information, there's some supplemental information. I then delete section six, the prohibition of sale, section seven, the waiver for specific uses, which is, goes along with the prohibition of sale, and section eight, manufacturers' responsibilities regarding level two priority chemicals. Section 9, the applicability, which would only apply to reporting now, is still in. So the exemptions are still in. The state can be allowed to take donations. Representative Zeller has actually got the participation in Interstate Chemicals Clearinghouse, which is what Representative Kiesenfeld does. I've been going down that path since we started with that this bill. And then we ask, we changed the reports, and we asked the department to report back on how it's going in terms of developing and implementing these lists. We asked that for by January 15th of next year, and then we asked the agency to report back on how the progress is developing the reporting system, and then reporting, assessing mechanisms to reduce and phase out priority chemicals in children's products, including how we could potentially fund that process. It has to include information from other states in reducing toxic chemicals in children's products, so we are trying to draw on the work of other states. And in developing the report, the agency can consult outside experts and groups working on this currently in Minnesota and nationally. And so that's the bill overall. And I also have four letters of support. They got stuck in. They support some of them support Representative Clark's bill, which we'll be hearing later today as well. Although Representative Clark and my bill are very different and do very different things. So if you look in House File 362, there's four letters of support. One from the Minnesota Nurses Association, the Minnesota Public Health Association, which is actually a letter only in support of my bill, not in support of Representative Clark's bill. The Learning Disabilities Association of Minnesota and the United Food and Commercial Workers, who are all supportive of House File 250. And with that, I think we can take some testimony. The bill does not do anything in terms of enforcement in changing those provisions. I hadn't had any requests from Representative Mullery's committee. Suppose if we do, I'd be willing to delete that section at this point.
We have an author's amendment to delete that section. Representative Knuth, it will have to go to civil law if that section is
okay.
in the bill. I mean, that's a given. And we've got, before we do that, I just want to make sure that people are testifying to the bill, and it's my fault. You had an
yes.
A5 amendment, too, which changes
I
a couple
have.
Words. And that's an author's amendment. Members should have the A5 amendment. It was passed out individually. It's a very brief one. But let's get it in the shape that the author wants to proceed with it. So will the chair move the A5 amendment? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Seeing none, that motion prevails.
Mr. Chair, can I ask what that is?
No. Not of me.
Yeah.
Representative Knuth, can you explain the difference to the biologics?
Mr. Chair, Representative Zellers, I just know some of the pharmaceutical companies had some concerns, and I'm not trying to regulate the pharmaceutical company's products, and biologics apparently is not covered by pharmaceuticals, so it's some comfort language. I'm not trying to go into the pharmaceutical world, so I can't tell you exactly what it is, but we're not trying to regulate it or even get information on it with this bill.
I was going to say, Mr. Chairman, I wasn't sure if that was the shampoo from the Target ad or if it was something new, so I guess I'll ask those folks, but thank you for the explanation, Representative Knuth.
Just trying to work with everybody and the terms they use. We've got some testifiers, and then we'll go back and talk relative to possible amendments on the enforcement provision. Welcome to the committee, or welcome back.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Kathleen Schuler. I work for the Institute for Agriculture and Trade Policy, and I'm also with Healthy Legacy, a statewide public health coalition. Healthy Legacy works on safe products made safely. We have 31 groups in our coalition, and Representative Knuth talked about some of the groups that have written letters of support. We have resolutions from the Minnesota Public Health Association and the American Public Health Association supporting the reform of chemical policy. Representative Knuth talked about our flawed regulatory system, and states can make a difference. In other committees, we heard the science of how children are affected by low-dose early life exposures, and so this bill focuses on protecting children. It also helps to move businesses in a positive direction. There's a lot of businesses that have adopted green chemistry and safer chemicals, but this will help move our markets in Minnesota toward a more green economy. Thank you.
Very good. Thank you. Is there anyone else that desires to testify with respect to House File 250? I see you're wiggling a finger. Does that mean you want to? Well, I've got John Easter from. Okay, come on down.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is John Easter, and I'm the Midwest Director of State Government Affairs for the American Chemistry Council. We're pleased to have the opportunity to make a few comments here today. And we share and support efforts to protect children from harmful exposures to chemicals and have, therefore, a very strong interest in this legislation. I first want to call your attention to a letter that you should have in your packet by a coalition of groups who have some concerns, and much of what's in this letter is the concerns that we have as well. But I want to make three main points here today very briefly. First, this is an issue we think should be handled at the federal level so that we don't have a patchwork of regulation state by state. And it is a top priority for the Obama administration and Representative Waxman, who is chair of the Energy and Commerce Committee at the federal level, why the first hearing on the modernization of the Toxic Substances Control Act was held just 3 weeks ago, and they're beginning that process of updating that very significant legislation that regulates industrial chemicals. We also think that if Minnesota does move forward, it should take advantage of the work that's been done in other states at a minimum. rather than try to reinvent the wheel, such as what we see happening in this particular bill. A lot of resources out there that are available. The second main concern we have is with the process itself. There's really broad discretion in this legislation as to identifying chemicals of level one concern, chemicals of level two concern. What are the specific processes of that? How will it happen? Our members do have some concern that there's a lack of definition in the specifics as to how that will occur. We also are concerned about how the alternatives are determined as well. The definition of alternative is functionally equivalent. If there's a chemical that is functionally equivalent, then that would work. But it lacks other criteria that are important, like quality, feasibility, risk, or cost. A fundamental point that we think is missing, too, is it's not just presence of chemicals, but in order to determine risk, it should also, hazard should be combined with exposure. That should be included in any process as well. And finally, the disclosure in Section 5 on information on priority chemicals is of concern. It's too broad. No recognition of trade secret protection. Companies spend lots of money and many years developing process for their products and a patenting process in those products. I know time is short. I'm just going to cut it off right there, and I appreciate having the chance to raise these concerns today. So,
thank you, Mr. Easter. We appreciate your testimony. Is there anyone else? Yes, sir. Welcome.
Welcome. Thank you. Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Douglas Troutman, and I am with the Soap and Detergent Association, a trade association based in Washington, D.C. We're a $30 billion industry, and we have approximately 110 companies in our membership scattered throughout the greater Midwest and also here in Minnesota as well. I want to thank you for the opportunity to appear, and I thank you for Representative Knuth's hard work on this bill. And the comments, which I'd like to make just briefly, because I know the hour is late and you have many issues before you, just three highlights here. Many of Mr. Easter's comments are echoed by the SBA. And with regard to the second issue, what does SBA do? We are highly engaged in cleaning products, as our name designates, and on our website you will find extensive operations that we've undertaken with middle schools and janitorial representatives to promote cleaning products and the health and safety benefits of those cleaning products. And we issue awards and have other recognition there, which I would commend to you in our website, cleaning101.com. My final point really is to identify, as I was hearing the remarks made, I think really what we're trying to get to is what problem are we trying to solve? And what we're trying to solve here is a recognition that there may be some updates that are necessary to the Toxic Substances Control Act. FDA is committed to that process. As you heard a month ago, there was the first hearing on toxic reform issues. FDA wrote to Chairman Waxman. We also have meetings scheduled tomorrow. I will not be there, but high principals in my association will be meeting with staff and other representatives to talk about these issues and how to press forward in a stakeholder fashion to get to some of the things which the members of this committee and the Minnesota House and Senate are very concerned about. So our commitment is there to do this at a federal level. It's very important that we have consistency and that we have a recognition that this is a national issue and that we don't bifurcate or create a patchwork of many other rules and regulations. I want to thank you for your attention, for your time. Happy to take any other questions or comments or concerns.
Thank you, Mr. Troutman. We appreciate your testimony. Is there anyone else that desires to testify with respect to the bill? We do have just one clerical item that I messed up my A5 amendments. and it was to the wrong page. I'd just like to get that fixed, and then we'll proceed with whatever questions members may have. I'd first ask that we move to reconsider the A5 amendment. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, seeing none, that motion prevails. I would then offer the A5 amendment once again, but with an oral amendment that it is actually to page 8, line 27, not page 9, line 27. And with that clarification, I'd appreciate your support of the A5 amendment. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, seeing none, that motion prevails. Representative Knuth, I should ask, are there questions or concerns from members of the committee? Representative Zeller?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. First of all, Mr. Chairman, and Representative Mullery is back in the room. There are penalties in here. The bill will obviously have to go to his committee. I'm just making sure. I see nodding up and down, but for the record, if you would agree, that would take care of one question.
Nodding's not good enough.
yeah,
Representative Knuth, what I asked.
I amended the bill. I took out a lot out of the regulatory parts of it. We're only asking them to report back. I hope they would report in good faith. And so I'd be willing to take out the civil enforcement lines 9.30 to 9.32 at this point.
All right, Representative Knuth offers the oral amendment. Offers the oral amendment to delete lines 9.30 through 9.32. Is that correct?
Yes, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Knuth. Yes, Representative David.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I was wondering if I could get a definition of at this point, because if it's at this point and then it goes to the floor someplace else and the penalties come back in some type of amendment and they haven't gone through the Mullery Committee, where are we then?
Thank you, Representative David.
I'd like a definition of at this point.
I meant now. I'm guessing that if they come back in some fashion that Representative Mullery may take issue with that. That's what chairs do.
Thank you.
Fair enough, Representative Mullery? And he's nodding again.
Thank you.
For the record, Representative Mullery is nodding again.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Mullery?
Things are very loose here.
But fluid.
I think there's no question that as the bill is right now, it certainly has to go to our committee.
Okay, so we have a motion to Representative Knuth's motion to delete 9.30 through 9.32. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed?
No.
Motion prevails.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Zellers, and then Representative Slocum, I apologize. By the way, you were first on the list, and you're always first in my list. So, but well, now you're not first on the list no more.
First in your heart. To the hearts of the American people.
How soon they forget. Mr. Chairman, and maybe I should have said this before Representative Knuth removed it, because Representative Sanders had a bill along the same lines that had there was no actual dollar penalty in there, and he was still forced to go. I mean, was his bill
invited
to go to Representative Mullery's committee. I would say under the same, and all that bill did, because I had the bill before, was to say, yeah, what the federal government is doing, we're doing here. So I don't see, even taking out the penalty section, I still think it should have to go to Representative Mullery's committee.
And I appreciate that. If you take a look at Rule 12.7, one of the House rules relative to freshman requirements, you'll find the reason.
Yeah.
is there any...
oh, wait, I was in my second term. Wait a minute.
Are there other questions relative to the bill? Representative Hoppe?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Knuth, I've got questions. There are all kinds of references in the bill to United Nations World Health Organization, California EPA, California Health and Safety Code, European Parliament. Is there any chance here that you could give me some comfort that we're not subverting Minnesota statute, replacing it with other states or other groups of countries or the United Nations?
Representative Knuth?
Mr. Chair, Representative Hoppe, we're listing sources that the Department of Health will be able to use to create its list of chemicals of high concern. They don't have to take these chemicals from these lists. Hopefully it'll reduce the amount of work they have to do themselves. In particular, other states are going through the same process, and Maine and Washington, and yeah, I think it's important to do the shared services and make sure we build on and use what they're doing in our agency work.
Thank you, Representative Knuth. I'm a big fan of plagiarism myself, so.
And Representative Slocum, I'm over my hurt now. So, Representative Slocum.
Mr. Chair, and I apologize for my lack of respect that I showed there. Briefly. I hold you in the highest esteem.
Thank you.
Even if you do ignore me. But anyway, my question is for Mr. Easter, wherever he went. My question is, are you actively supporting the federal legislation? And if so, they're taking testimony. Can you provide us with the testimony in Congress that you have given?
Mr. Easter.
Mr. Chair, members, the American Chemistry Council is very supportive of modernizing the Toxic Substances Control Act, and I didn't testify there, but I'll see what I can find to get to you that our organization provided to them. We look forward to working with those on the federal level to update that law.
Thank you, Mr. East. Representative Slocum, anything further?
I look forward to the information.
Are there other questions or concerns, Representative Zeller?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And the on page 2 of the bill, we heard this in the Labor Division with Representative Thiessen's bill when it comes to green chemistry. Representative Mahoney had said at that point, and the reason I ask about all these committees, Mr. Chairman, is we're going to put in the law here a pretty far-reaching, broad-based approach to a process a lot of other folks have been trying to do on their own and haven't gotten straight yet. So I'm just trying to get, if we're going to do this and it's going to be a big project, let's do it right. So when we talked about this in subdivision, Representative Mahoney said anything dealing with green chemistry should come to his committee as well. And I'm not sure if this, I don't think this has made a stop in his committee, but since he's not on this committee anymore, I know in the subdivision he was very concerned about that. This is yet another stop I think he would probably have to make along the line.
Thank you, Representative Zellers. He did not make a formal request of this committee to refer it to him. I'm sure that if he does, Representative Knuth will honor that request. Are there other questions or comments? If not, the chair will
move. Yes, I have a couple of amendments to the bill.
Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't see them.
That's right.
Oh, that's because they're right here at my left hand.
They're right next to you.
Which,
all right.
Which do you prefer to
We're in the minority, Mr. Chair, but not quite that far. I'll offer the A6th Amendment first, because what we're doing here, Mr. Chairman, and we've got a whole bunch, we've got page after page of very prescriptive language that's going to require these agencies to do a great deal of stuff. Once that decision comes down, and if it's the wrong decision, someone's gonna be made to pay or be held accountable, which is traditionally around here, what the way we usually handle that is we have rulemaking in place. I don't see how you get from all these chemicals, and then by anybody's estimation, there's 8,000, 9,000, down to, in Washington State's case, I think they got down to about 1,800, and they're still looking. Anybody else has been doing this has been using rulemaking. I think that if we're going to fall in line with, again, what Representative Thiessen's bill and Knuth is doing, where we're going to have a process set up, we have to have rulemaking.
Thank you, Representative Zellers. Representative Knuth, are you in favor of additional bureaucracy?
Representative Atkins, Representative Zellers, I would oppose the amendment. I think we can have the agencies go through this and get some good information on them without the rulemaking process.
Representative Zellers?
Well, then I'd like to have a roll call, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. Are there other comments with respect to it? If not, Representative Zellers renews his motion with respect to the A6th Amendment. Roll call has been requested. And I'll just keep talking briefly until the roll call sheet. All right. The clerk will call a roll.
Atkins?
No.
Anderson? Andrews? Davids?
Aye.
Dabney? Fritz?
No.
Hoppy?
Aye.
Hosh? Johnson?
No.
Canoes?
No.
Lilly?
No.
Mullery? Murdoch?
Yes.
Sanders?
Aye.
Simon?
No.
Slocum?
No.
Tao?
No.
Zellers?
Aye.
Motion does not prevail. 8-5. Representative Zellers, do you also have the A7 amendment? Is that
right? I do, Mr. Chairman. I do have to make an oral amendment because the author removed part of the section of the bill before we got to committee here. I have to remove, delete everything after line 11, 1.111. Or line 10, excuse me. Yep, you're right.
Okay. Representative Zellers offers the A7 amendment and orally notes that everything after line 1.10 is deleted. Representative Zellers for the amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And this, I think, is probably one of the more critical parts of the bill. What Representative Knuth is asking us to do in this bill, or asking the manufacturers of these products to do, is really trade secrets. How they put something together. I would imagine that if this were in the food products division, we're basically asking them to give out Colonel Sanders' recipe and the Coke formula all in one fell swoop, so that Pepsi and those guys over at Burger King can have the formula. And if we're gonna ask them to release this much data, they've got to have protection, or none of what Representative Knuth is doing, and no offense to the chair of the committee, is going to make any difference, because the lawyers are going to eat this for years and years and years and years, and none of this will actually see the light of day because the lawyers.
So that's a positive then. You're arguing.
Well, it's the billable hours they keep on giving, Mr. Chairman. But I think if we're going to ask Minnesota job providers, besides asking them to do all this extra reporting and bureaucracy, we're going to ask them to release some of their trade secrets, that darn well better be protected.
Representative Canoe.
Mr. Chair, Representative Zellers, you know, if the American Chemistry Council would come talk to me about some of their concerns or any of the retailers, I would be happy to address some of these concerns. And the reporting has been in there through three committees so far, and I have not actually had this issue raised. I had a meeting with the local representative of the American Chemistry Council, as well as the retailers. They never brought it up, so yeah, I'm a little disappointed by that, and hoping they'll, you know, help me make this legislation work better for everyone as we continue forward with it. Just to point out that the reporting is actually requiring whether or not a chemical is used, and I get Representative Zellers, that's a huge part of the bill in my opinion, and I'm just a question about your amendment. Would just the use of a single chemical or the presence of a chemical in a product be considered a trade secret?
Representative Pinsler.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. That's the point, Representative Knuth. In a lot of these cases, these are trade secrets. There's a reason why one product sells more than the other product. Those folks have figured out a way. They've invented the better mousetrap. And if you're going to expose those folks or whatever their proprietary secrets are, and no offense to the government officials who maybe or may not be dealing with it, we in government should not be taking the risk. Their proprietary, the things that they spend in some cases millions, maybe billions of dollars to develop, we're now going to put in a government warehouse that may or may not be secure. I think if we're going to handle that kind of data, besides the lawsuits that would be involved, I would not want us in government, no matter who passes the bill, to be that irresponsible with that amount of data.
Representative
Biddle? So, Mr. Chair, Representative Biddle, what I'm trying to get at is, you know, if there's formaldehyde, such as lots of children's bath products have recently been shown to have in them, 1,4-dioxane, a known cancer-causing substance, you know, China actually took some products off the shelf, put them back on again, but there was that much concern, kind of a turnaround, China being worried about some American products. I'm not necessarily opposed to trade secret language, and maybe if we'd be willing to work on it, but I do know that parents should have the information if certain chemicals that are considered toxic are in the products that they're buying for their children. That's the problem, they don't have that information now. And whether it's formaldehyde, dioxin, mercury, 1,4-dioxane, these are things that parents deserve to know, and that's the whole purpose of the bill, in order to protect our children. So I'm trying to get a sense of if that would preclude just basic presence or absence of a chemical.
Can I, if I might, suggest that we do this? I'm intrigued by the concept. I'll also tell you that Representative Knuth, I didn't have anybody approach me with this idea. I appreciate Representative Zellers proposing it. I think it's a valuable idea. I don't know if this is exactly how it ought to be handled. But what I'd suggest that we do, and we have, obviously we're up against deadline tomorrow. Mm-hmm. What I would suggest that we do, I oppose it as we sit here today, because I really don't know anything about it, and if it was that important to folks, I would have assumed that they'd come and visit with me too.
and share their concern with me, but I am cognizant of the whole trade secret thought, and heaven forbid that we should get the Koch formula or something like that. And I'd suggest that you continue to think through it with the and I'd also suggest that anybody that wants this language in there come visit with you or with me or whomever, and that by the time you get it to the House floor that you've thought it through and decide whether or not you think it's a valuable asset to your bill. But with that, I would at this point suggest opposition to it. Is there additional comments or questions with respect to the A7 amendment? Then Representative Zellers, it's your amendment. You got last word on it.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And again, because of what we're dealing with here, I'm more than happy to keep working on it, but because what we're dealing with is exactly the reason why someone is able to sell a product, one or more products, than their competitors, is exactly why it's proprietary data. I'm not saying, Representative Canoes, what the speech from the latest fundraising letter, this is about what's in these products that makes them specifically the property of the manufacturer. So, Mr. Chairman, I appreciate that, but I do think we should do this. And if it is, if there's language that needs to be taken out, that's fine. I just don't think in a responsible manner we should go forward with this data being thrown into this bill without having this protection in there. Just my opinion, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Representative Zellers. And if the amendment does not go on, I assume they will have a spirited discussion of the same issue on the House floor. All in favor of the A7 amendment, say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? No. The motion does not prevail. Are there any other amendments, comments, questions? If not, the chair will renew his...
No, Mr. Chair, I have another question.
Representative Zellers.
Well, it was actually a question that Representative Lilly had brought up in the division, Mr. Chairman, and I'd like to get a better explanation because in division we were told on Section 9, page 8 of the bill, that motor vehicles, that and I actually handed out the article of the little girl who couldn't ride her motorcycle because of some of the stuff that was banned. Representative Lilly asked in division if this bill would have any of those same kind of effects. We were told in division it wouldn't because that doesn't qualify. And I actually went and looked up the statute, Mr. Chairman, and in definition of a motor vehicle, this bill actually would do that. And I'd just like to get Representative Knuth's comments or corrections on that because in looking at the statute, it motor vehicle does not include an all-terrain vehicle. So I'm just curious as to why there was a mistake in the subdivision, especially for Representative Lilly.
Are you referencing lines 8.19?
Yes, Mr. Chairman.
All right. Representative Knuth to that question.
Mr. Chair, Representative Zellers, first of all, I'm not sure an all-terrain vehicle is meant just for children 12 or under, so I wouldn't think it would be included that way. So I don't see it included in the bill generally, and second, the bill requires reporting. There's no phase out, no saying you can't do something. It just requires that we get some good information for parents to be able to make good decisions for their children. But if there is an all-terrain vehicle that's meant just for children 12 and under, if we can find one and we need to make an exemption for it, I'd be willing to do that.
No, I think there are.
There are. Okay. Well,
that's the story,
Representative
Chairman.
Zellers.
Yeah. Well, no, Mr. Chairman, that's the story. And again, it's in the
Representative text. Zellers, if you have an amendment that would accomplish that, I'd be more than happy to put it on.
Okay.
If it's motor vehicles for children under age 12, whatever that includes.
Well, we've got this really talented staff that's right here. That because you probably don't want Representative Zellers trying to draft that language.
Oh, I'll be more than that.
Well, that's what I'm afraid of. Suddenly, it would swallow your whole bill, Representative.
You can take it down to one section, Mr. Chairman, at the end, if you'd like.
Ms. Newman, do you have a suggested proposal relative to the language that reflects what Representative Zellers indicated and what Representative Knuth will agree to? To what age do you want it to be? About 85. But I think he'd settle for 12.
Right. Like I said, Mr. Chairman, looking at the article, thank you, Mr. Chairman, looking at the article, Jacqueline was 12, so I don't know if it needs to be 15 or 14, depending on, for some of these bikes, depending on the size of the rider, you could be a 15-year-old still riding in a different weight class, so I would... I don't know the I don't know the weight classes for juvenile riding right now, Mr. Chairman, off the top of my head, but I would say probably at least 13 would catch at least these folks that are in the article that Representative Lilly was actually talking about.
So we I don't think we've quite babbled long enough, Representative Zellers, for our talented staff to.
Well, you know, Mr. Chairman, I'll be more than happy to do some research and save it for a House Floor Amendment if you like.
Representative Zellers, if we want to do it in one of the other committees, if you can get me some language that I'm comfortable with, I would be willing to offer it in another committee.
There you go. All right. And actually, the way that this is drafted, you've got some negatives, and then it'd be another devil, and it's just, I think it's better that we approach it in a careful way than try to do it on the fly here. Is there additional discussion or questions? The chair will renew his motion that House File 250, as amended, be recommended to pass and refer to the Committee on Finance with a recommended re-referral to Housing Finance.
Oh, I heard that right.
And there's been a roll call request?
No, actually, Mr. Chairman, I apologize. There was still a question about where it was going because of the Mallory language. Well, I know, but because of the Mallory language, there's still, again, Representative Sanders' bill didn't have a penalty in there, but it still had to go to Representative Mallory's committee. And adding on the biologicals now, actually, with the amendment of change, it's the Health Committee that has purview now, and I don't think it's been to the Health Finance and Policy.
I meant Public Health and public Health and Housing.
Mr. Chair, I was told by staff that it would have to go to the Public Health Housing Finance Committee. It's been through the Health Policy Committee already.
So, in fact, my motion that I made, which is to re-refer it back to finance with a recommended re-referral to Public Health and Housing Finance, is the appropriate motion. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed?
No.
Motion prevails. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members.
The next, I believe that we have Representative Clark here. We've got House File 326. And Representative Dabney, every time I turn, he's not there when the chair will move the adoption of the division report. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Seeing none, that motion prevails. The chair will then move that House File 326 be recommended to pass and refer to the General Register. Representative Clark, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Committee members, you should have before you the committee engrossment that ends in 326-1. And that's the bill before you then, which is a bill that was phased out by CMOA from certain children's chemical products. And the bill that you have is a carefully crafted one now. It's been through lots of discussions and compromises, and the language you have before you is actually the language that Representative Zellers proposed and it passed in the last committee. So I appreciate your support for the bill, and I guess if there's any questions at this point, I'd be glad to take them. I have Lindsay Dahl who's here who was one of the persons who actually did so much of the work on crafting the compromise. So I want to thank her and Representative Zellers for all their work. Any questions?
Thank you, Representative. Do you have any witnesses or anybody, any guests?
I guess Ms. Dahl could come down and see if there's any questions specifically for her to make a couple comments. She's done a lot of work. She did a lot of the negotiations on the final language.
Hi, thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Lindsay Dahl, and I am with Healthy Legacy. My colleague told you about all about who we are, so I'll just be brief. I just want to say that Healthy Legacy, Minnesota-based public health coalition, strongly supports this bill, and we have been working hard with both Representative Zellers and others to try to find a middle ground for us. So I'll stand for any questions. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Dahl. Anybody like to be heard against this bill? Seeing none, any questions from members? Seeing none, with that, the chair renews the motion that House File 326 be recommended to pass as a... No amendment? As amended and sent to the General Register. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed?
No.
Motion prevails.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Committee members.
Representative Clark, did you have another bill?
Chairman, we have a liquor bill, but I think it's not on the...
Okay. No, we're not going to be...
I'd be glad
at this
to
point.
It up, if you're scared of having it.
Representative Zellers. Thank you, Representative Clark. Representative Zellers.
Mr. Chair, we moved that last bill as amended, and I don't think it was amended.
It was?
Oh. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Representative David. I was not clear on that as well, so. Representative Zellers.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Do you want to move your...
I'd like to move House File 2099 be referred to... it be passed and referred to the General Register.
Thank you.
I think, Mr. Chairman, I have a technical amendment I think I need.
Okay, so does everybody have... Oh, okay. We have your bill before us, Representative Zellers. I think they're passing it out. Maybe you want to start telling us about it just for a few seconds here.
Actually, Mr. Chairman, I have a...
The one with the paper, right? The handwritten?
Actually, that's one, and there's a second one that should be in member's packet already.
Oh, okay. This, well, let's move it then. If it's probably in the packet. I'm sorry.
So I'll move the A090225 amendment, Mr. Chairman.
Any questions to Representative Zeller's amendment? Seeing none, all in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Amendment adopted. And then I think everybody does now have your second amendment.
Sure, and I'll offer the A101 amendment, Mr. Chairman.
Any questions to Representative Zeller's second amendment? It's H2099A101, the handwriting. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Adopted. We have your bill as amended before us. Go ahead, Representative Zeller.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And this is the Commerce Committee Agency cleanup bill, some licensing, regulatory stuff. I have Mr. Peter Bart here, or Brass, here with me from the agency. Can run through very quickly some of the changes, what we're looking at in here, and then stand for any questions from the members.
Mr. Brass?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. I'm Peter Bratz, Licensing Director for the Minnesota Department of Commerce. House File 2099 is the department's licensing and license education bill. It concerns insurance, real estate, and real estate appraiser licenses. Our three main goals with this bill are to update our laws to match model language recommended by the National Association of Insurance Commissioners, or NAIC, streamline our process for approving continuing education courses, and adopt recommendations made by the Federal Appraisal Subcommittee, or ASC. And I'd like to give you a very brief high-level overview of the sections of the bill. Sections 1 through 24 are related to license education materials to be added to the Commerce General Power Statute. Most of this material is being transferred from rule, and the rule is being repealed by this bill. Sections 25 through 31 amend the Insurance Producer Statute, primarily through adopting provisions of the NAIC Producer Licensing Model Act. Sections 32 through 54 amend the Insurance Adjuster Statute by adopting the NAIC Independent Adjuster Licensing Guideline and Public Adjuster Licensing Model Act. Section 56 is real estate pre-licensed course curriculum information transferred from rule to the Real Estate Brokers and Salesperson Statute. Section 57 contains amendments to that same statute that result from streamlining the continuing education course review process. And finally, sections 58 through 73 amend the real estate appraiser statute, primarily by transferring material from rule, also being repealed by this bill. Some of the new material here also reflects changes requested by the ASC. We've discussed this bill with licensees, education providers, and other interested parties, and we believe that we have addressed their concerns about policy, and to the extent that there may be any remaining concerns about implementation, we certainly remain open to discussing those. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Brush. We have someone else that might be heard, Mr. Cicetto. Oh, Representative Zellers. Oh. I'm looking at a note from Zellers. Representative David, sorry.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. To the gentleman from the Commerce Department, you mentioned that the NAIC much was modeled after that. Have you heard anything from the National Conference of Insurance Legislators regarding this legislation?
Mr. Brett. Mr. Chair, Representative David, no, nothing directly on it.
Okay, thank you.
Mr. David.
Mr. Pizzetto, sorry. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Dominic Pizzetto. I'm here today representing the Minnesota Independent Insurance Agents Association and also the National Association of Insurance and Financial Advisors in Minnesota. First of all, the amendment that was offered by the author took care of a good deal of our concerns. And frankly, there is just one issue that I want to call to your attention that's left, I think, that needs further exploration. This is a major change in the licensing system in Minnesota, and we think it's very good. And this committee and the Commerce Department over the last few years has been very helpful in creating an online licensing system that we think now works very, very efficiently and is pretty much satisfactory to most of the licensees that are licensed by the state. One of the things that is being done in this particular legislation is to change the licensing cycle for all the insurance agents in the state. Previously, we have all been licensed in October of every year. Actually, half of the agents are licensed in October one year with a two-year license, and then the other half come up in that cycle. And frankly, it's a cycle that we've gotten used to, and there are a couple things that go on because of that. One is that we offer most of our continuing education either at our annual meetings in April or in the fall, so that agents can obtain that education prior to their need to have that for licensure. Now, I will call your attention to the fact that we're actually lowering the number of continuing education requirements in Minnesota from 30 hours every 2 years to 24 hours every 2 years, and that is part of this conformity with other states, and we're not opposing that. The only concern that we have is that when we go to this monthly licensing, now agents will be licensed based on their birthday, so it'll be set up 12 monthly segments every 2 years. Our only concern with that is that we can understand why that was a major issue when we were working with paper licenses, and the department got all of this pieces of paper in October and frankly had a very difficult time working with that. But now we have an online system, frankly, where we're outsourcing most of the licensing requirements to another entity, and it's much easier to do, and frankly, I don't think it's much more of a problem for the department. That said, though, if we choose to go ahead with this, our only concern is that we be given time and opportunity to educate insurance producers. There are some, I believe, 80,000 licensed producers in Minnesota. Unfortunately, I don't represent the majority of them in the organizations that I work with that are probably going to understand this, but there are a great deal of a number of insurance producers that are going to have to figure out a new cycle, get this up to running in their own mind, and be able to address this monthly licensing issue. I've just asked the author of the bill and the department to work with us on that, and I think it's something we can discuss as the bill goes forward. And I would encourage you to support the legislation.
Thank you, Mr. Pizzetto. I'm sorry. Representative David.
Thank you. Two questions. The first one is to Mr. Pizzetto. Okay, so individual producers would be on their birthday. What do we do with agency licenses? Would that be all a certain date?
Mr. Chairman, I don't think there's anything in the proposal that affects the agency license. I assume that would all be on an annual basis.
Representative David.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Pizzetto, my birthday is August 28, 1958. What am I going to do? What are they going to do to me?
Mr. Chairman, I assume you're going to retire shortly, and it may not be an issue.
I could.
Mr. Chairman, frankly, I think that your licensing cycle will be due the next time that it comes up after the effective date of the Act. It will be due in August. So you will have to file online at August and to make sure that you've had your continuing education, the 24 hours that you need for your licensing cycle, and the fees that go on with that. And that will happen in August instead of October.
Then, Mr. Chairman, Mr. Pizzetto, what happens from October when my license expires until August 20th, 1958?
or night, whatever year it is, August 28th.
Mr. Chairman, as I understand it, there is a sort of a period when this is initiated where you will be given a license for at least 12 months, 13 months, 14 months, or whatever. In your case, I believe it would be for 21 months, and it would take you through that period till that birth date. And then, starting that birth date, your cycle would be 2 years, every 2 years in August.
Representative, well, Mr. Chairman, if the gentleman from the department could step up.
Mr. Bresch.
Mr. Chair, Representative David, very good question. In fact, Dominic and I spoke about that just before we came down here. And we've got a phased approach here so that a license that is initially issued or initially renewed once the bill becomes effective is still using the old system and would still have up to 2 years, but at least another year. So in your case, I believe if your license expired, say, or set to expire October 31st, 2010, it would, but then you would, in your case, go until August 2012.
Oh, okay.
Because if we made it August 2011, you wouldn't get a full year. And we want to make sure you get at least a full year. So you would go past that to August 2012.
Well, Mr. Chairman, 2012?
Well, the bill's effective date is July 1st, 2010. And again, just using my example, if you renewed October 2010, then your birthday comes up in 2011. That's not 12 months later, so it would go through 2012.
Well, Mr. Chairman, and to the gentleman from the Commerce Department, you know, we do all this right on computer. Why don't we just leave it alone?
Mr. Bresch.
Mr. Chair, Representative Davis, again, what we're doing here is trying to adopt the uniformity initiative from the NAIC to avoid the patchwork of state regulation that was referred to on a previous bill, and I think the second previous bill. But at the same time, we're preserving state regulation, because by adopting these uniformity initiatives, including the first month renewal cycle, we're making it easier for producers who do business in more than one state to know how to comply with the renewal cycles and the rest of the insurance laws there.
Mr. Chairman, and to the gentleman from the Commerce Department, I'm licensed personally in four. Let's say someone was licensed in four states. Are the other states, for example, like just hypothetically, Wisconsin, Iowa, and Illinois, are they under the NAIC model?
Mr.
Chair, Representative David, I believe so. Wisconsin, I think, has been out front of this. We're catching up to Wisconsin a little bit on it. Illinois, I'm not quite sure about. Iowa, I think, is also making steps, if they haven't already, to adopt this. There's a national movement, Representative, that we're part of.
Thank you, Mr.
Chairman. Thank you, Mr. Bresch. Representative Zellers. Any questions for the author? Representative Tao. You're okay? Okay. With that, Representative Zellers would renew
my motion, House File 2099 as amended, be passed and referred to the General Registry.
Any questions or none to the motion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed? Motion prevails. You're on your way, sir.
That's enthusiasm, Mr. Chairman. Thank you.
Representative Loeffler. The chair, though, move that House File 2163 be recommended to pass and sent to the General Register. I understand you have an author's amendment?
Mr. Chairman, yes, I do. It's the H2163A1. It's
okay.
The technical amendment.
The chair made a mistake. I need to... Okay. With that, any questions regarding the amendment? The chair will move the amendment. All in favor say aye. Those opposed? Amendment adopted.
Thank you, Mr.
Representative
Loeffler. And members, this bill implements a couple of ideas that emerged out of the Health Insurance Reform Work Group of the Health Care Access Commission's work from a couple of summers ago, in which I spent the rest of my, I think it was in this room, that we had a lot of our meetings. And the work group was composed of a bipartisan group of legislators, providers, three health plans, labor and consumer representatives. And this bill implements two simple changes that would, I believe, and the work group believes, have merit to improve the market for small businesses to and small employees to secure health insurance on an affordable basis and continue to provide that for their employees. The first section, Section 1, changes the definition of small employer, which is currently 50 for the purposes of small group insurance. This has up to, and it changes it to 100 employees. This was at one point down to 29, the most recent increase in the number of small employees that would qualify for the small employer protection was passed in 1997, and that's when we went to 50 employees. The second part of the bill deals with the issue of small employers want to be have a competitive market and they want to secure quotes from a variety of different health plans to see that they're getting the best and most affordable deal for their employees. And right now we had a small business representative on the work group who said, you know, one of the major problems is that every plan has their own form. And you have to have your employees figure out and fill out the same information on different forms for each quote. And this would direct the Commissioner of Commerce in consultation with insurers, the Department of Health, and employers to come up with a standardized form, application form that we could consider next year. The first change is not effective until 2010. That gives us some time to analyze the market, make sure that things work. And the second change is effective this July, so that we'd be able to consider that as well next year. The advantage of this, you should know that a small employers currently are advantaged in our health insurance market by a number of things. They are cannot be turned down for health insurance. There's guaranteed issues for small employers. They have premium rates that that have to vary within a set band, so they have some rate protection. And yet they're still covered and rated individually based on health status, age, and other permitted characteristics of the employee group. So they still get an individual rating for that particular employer. And so that, Mr. Chair, is basically what's before us. I have a number of witnesses who could provide additional information and an example of what the advantages of this might be. And I would first like to invite up to the stand Joy Mosley, who is the CEO and owner of Biotest Laboratories. She's an employer who can give an illustration of the kind of issues that employers face. And then we have a representative, some of the agents who work with us.
Thank you, Representative Loeffler. Please state your name for the record and go ahead when you're ready.
Mr. Chair, committee, and Representative Loeffler, I'm Joy Mosley, owner of Biotest Laboratories, Inc. I would like to thank you for all of your efforts, your concerted efforts to assure employment for our people in Minnesota, as well as to work diligently to assure we can provide medical care. And I appreciate the opportunity to support you in that process by sharing our experience. We are 20 years old. We have grown very gradually over the last 20 years as a contract service provider to medical companies. We provide laboratory testing and manufacturing of medical products. We employ individuals who have a wide range of skill sets and educational backgrounds. We've been considered a small employer as it relates to the Minnesota small pool until 2008. We grew from 45 employees to 75 employees, a growth of 40% from 2004 to 2008. But in 2008, as we were no longer able to participate in the Minnesota small group pool, we had an employee who experienced a significant medical condition. The expenses for a significant medical condition today can easily go over $1 million, $1.5 million, or $2 million. Had it not been for this single claim, we would have been with an experience rating of 12%. As a result of this single claim, two insurance carriers declined to quote us.
we ultimately negotiated a 40% increase in our medical coverage with our existing carrier. If we'd been allowed to participate in the Minnesota small group, we would have received a cap at 15%. And we would have had the option to hear other quotes. When our insurance premium increased by 40% for the following year, this increase in actual expense is greater than our net profit for the year 2008. We decided that we would proceed to the year 2009, continuing to provide the same level of care, knowing that if we had a drop in revenue or an increase in expenses in some other area, it could jeopardize our ability to pay our bills. So we know that we have to pay our bills in order to operate. If we are unable to increase our revenues significantly enough that we have a profit margin to cover these increases in medical bills, we have to cut our expenses. As we look at what expenses we can cut, we evaluate how leanly we're operating. Do we have operations in our company that we can process more efficiently and thus cut costs? The time it takes to cut costs significantly, if you are able to do that, or the time it takes to increase your revenue significantly enough to cover these expenses is not immediate. Your expenses for increased medical coverage is immediate. You have no way to predict what it is going to be, and it's immediate. So you ask yourself, what do I do? You have to cut expenses because you must pay your bills. One of the things that we must face, we are concerned, is reduced benefits. We know our employees would rather that we reduce benefits than cut jobs. We may have to cut our medical care. When we look into 2009, we continue to have significant medical expenses associated with our employee base. So as we evaluate whether or not we're going to be able to continue to provide the insurance coverage, we're asking that you assist us by looking at whether or not a company who suddenly reaches 50 employees should be segregated as a separate group for insurance coverage. If we were a part of the Minnesota small group, we would have carriers quote us. There would be a cap on our insurance, and thus we could plan. Right now, we know the large group has no cap, and thus the increase in our costs could be greater than what we can spare. 50% of our employees are either single or they're single heads of households. These employees, therefore, depend on us for their insurance coverage. If they were not getting insurance coverage from us, likely they would seek coverage from the state. You trust and expect small businesses to be able to provide medical care for their employees. The small businesses who have 50 employees or more have really no means to spread their risk. So we, the employer, would have to pay these insurance claims if we are not granted a coverage that we can afford for the employee, and neither could afford to cover them.
And Ms. Mosley, I'm like the bad cop. The good cop was Representative Lilly, and my job is to sort of get, because we've got several, I think, a dozen bills yet left to do, so if you can try to wrap up, we'd sure appreciate it.
That was really it. So,
well, perfect then.
My last line was...
You just saw me and said, oh, enough is enough here.
Let's spread the risk and we can benefit everyone.
All right, thank you.
Thank you.
Is there anyone else that desires to testify? Welcome.
Thank you very much, Chairman Atkins and committee, and also Representative Loeffler. My name is Chris Schneeman. I am an independent insurance agent here in St. Paul, and I am representing today the three major insurance associations in the operating in the state of Minnesota, the health underwriters, Minnesota NAPA, and also the Minnesota Independent Agents and Brokers Association. We are strongly in favor of the increasing the size of the small group pool from 50 employees as a maximum to 100 employees, for the exact reasons that that Joy explained to you, is that the problem that we read about in the newspapers about unpredictability of health insurance premiums really is a problem that is focused on those employers between 50 and about 200 employees. They are a very small group to be able to handle these million-dollar claims that Joy referred to, and end up being put at a tremendous disadvantage when it comes time to buy their health insurance. So we are encouraging this legislation in order to be able to improve predictability for employers so that they can maintain the job patterns that they have and also improve competition within the marketplace. I think Representative Loeffler, you mentioned that the 2 to 50 was established in 1997. If, in fact, we agree that health care inflation has been double-digit for these last 12 years and we apply that catastrophic claim line to the 2 to 50, we would find that our legislation would have been indexed so that we would be at 2 to 118 employees by now, just mapping against that same trend line. So we'd encourage that you support growing this book. Will certainly result in a more stable and predictable marketplace for our employers.
Thank you, Mr. Schneeman. There are others that I've got, Mr. Griffin and Mr. Johnson, that desire to testify. Apparently not. They're not coming down, so we'll... Whoever wants to lead us off, just come on down, identify yourself, proceed with your testimony.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Phil Grissom. I'm appearing today on behalf of the Minnesota Council of Health Plans. Appreciate your indulgence. I'm running out of battery power.
Aren't we all?
We are. Mr. Chairman, again, Phil Grissom, representing the Minnesota Council of Health Plans. Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I'm here to oppose the expansion of the definition of small employer from 2 to 100 as contained in Representative Loeffler's bill, House File 2163. We believe that this will have a negative impact on the rating of small groups, which is a guaranteed issue right now. We've done a quick scan of the laws in other states, and we find that no other state currently has their small employer definition of the group size that goes to 100. This will have an impact that's similar in the market to putting pressure on a balloon. If you squeeze it in one area, in the larger groups, it's going to squeeze out in the smaller area and affect those groups that are currently in the 2 to 50 market. Groups that have worked hard to stay healthy and keep their costs down will end up carrying more of the cost of sicker groups if this small market change occurs. Mr. Chairman, a couple of other quick points. Current law under the state allows us to be aligned with the federal HIPAA portability law. Changes in state statutes from the current to the 2 to 100 level will create significant issues and confusion for groups, as some will not have guaranteed issue rights under federal law, and some will. Under federal HIPAA, small group firms are guaranteed access to health insurance that's not necessarily required under federal law for larger groups. All groups are subject to the guaranteed renewability provisions under HIPAA, and just because we expand the market, it doesn't mean federal law is going to change. There is consideration of this proposal with the NIAC. If it should happen there, Mr. Chairman, members, I presume that the federal portability law will change as well. Representative Loeffler and I agree on a lot of things that need to be done in the health market. We don't agree on this one. We also don't agree on what the Insurance Market Reform Committee did two summers ago. And I will look at the document that are the minutes from the November 5th of 2007 that was sent out by Chair Olson. To members of the committee, and under Section B, cost containment through insurance regulation changes is recommended. The consideration of increasing the small employer definition to more than 50 employees for the purpose of health insurance purchasing. Under the recommendation, it states, quote, the current definition of small employer for health insurance purposes is an employer with 50 or fewer employees. Actually, it said of 50 or fewer. I assume that was a misspelling. The group felt that the definition should be reviewed if the protections provided small employers may be appropriate for groups of larger size. But the work group was not prepared to address what larger size to recommend without further study. And, Mr. Chairman, we would urge you to study it further before you adopt this legislation. Mr. Chairman, we also have concerns about adopting a form. We think that the NIAC is adopting a form within the last section of the bill. That is being considered there as well, but we think it ought to be done on that national level. I know that you're in a hurry today. I'll leave my comments to that. But, Mr. Chairman, members, we are opposed to the bill. I sympathize with the previous testifier and the troubles that she's having with her company. I just got my rate increase from my insurance company as an individual for my company. It's the second rate increase that I have because I'm an individual, not limited to one a year, and my increases were even larger, and it's not based at all on experience. This bill does not do anything to fix the underlying costs that are going to be going up in healthcare. That's why we've been pleading with you not to adopt new mandated benefits. Mr. Chairman, we need to do some things, but this is not what we need to do. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Griffin. And I think they found out where you worked. And that's why your premiums went up. They probably figured you're more susceptible. But, Mr. Johnson, welcome back.
Mr. Chairman and committee members, Bob Johnson, Insurance Federation of Minnesota. To not duplicate, Mr. Chairman, I'll just maybe leave the question to the committee with two questions, which actually cannot be answered tonight. And that's unfortunate. The two questions are, how many employers today in Minnesota that are in the 50 to the 100 market segment that are being impacted by this bill, how many employers are going to have what percent increase because of this new compression? So again, what the House File 2163 does, it takes employers in that 51 to 100, pushes them into the small group law and the reform box that our industry supported when it was passed way back when. It's carefully constructed, but that forces rates together, so there are cross subsidizations that happen in that market. So no one on the committee tonight will be able to know. I don't have answers for how many employers in Minnesota are going to get a premium increase of what percent, and it will definitely happen. So the committee should know for certain X number of employers in the 51 to 100 bracket are going to get an artificial rate increase of a certain percent because of the forced compression. The second question, Mr. Chairman, that no one will be able to answer tonight is that how many small employers currently in the 2 to 50 market are going to be impacted by this experience being pressed into this box? That's definitely going to happen. So the challenge, Mr. Chairman, with making this change in this manner is that there is some modeling that should be done. There's some questions that I think it would be better and nice to have answers to before we change the public policy here. And I think from the industry's perspective, I respect the agents, and I know the agents would like to see the change. The sellers of the product do not support the change, and it'd be nice to have the sellers of the product and the agents who sell the product coming together on this. We're not together on this. There are other reforms that I think the agents are supporting as part of a broader package. I think this is one part of it. But, Mr. Chairman, I think making the change to the law, and again, as Mr. Griffin had indicated, the fact that no other state, as far as we know, and we're pretty sure that's correct, no other state in their small group market has chosen to expand the box beyond the 50. There's some pretty good reasons for that. And in closing, Mr. Chairman, there are a number of other state statutes that we'll not be able to talk about tonight that are based on the small group market being in that 2 to 50. There's loss ratio, statute 62A.021, and there's an impact by expanding the box of small group on other state statutes that are not before the committee tonight. 62Q.17 that deals with voluntary purchasing pools and small employers deemed to join in. Mr. Chairman, there's just other questions that are raised that, again, that are not going to be able to be answered tonight. For those reasons, we oppose House File 2163, Section 2, on working on a uniform application. We've been part of that process and ongoing with Minnesota Chamber of Commerce, NFIB, and other groups, and I believe we can continue to do that, and we'll see something come about that. But thank you, Mr. Chairman and committee members.
Thank you, Mr. Johnson. Representative Davis, you had a question or comment?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman, and one for each testifier. First, Mr. Johnson, I understand the raising prices through compression and so forth, but it begs then the question on the other side is how many new employers will be able to get coverage, or how many more will be able to get on there that didn't have it before? I guess that's just more of a comment. But the question to Mr. Griffin on the HIPAA issue, I hadn't really thought this one through, but if you go from 2 to 50 to 2 to 100, you had mentioned something that there might, some could continue coverage, some couldn't. Were you referring to COBRA, or what were we talking about there, Mr. Griffin?
Mr. Griffin?
Mr. Chairman, my understanding, and I am far from being an expert on HIPAA, which I consider a law that we've spent more money on paper notices to people than we have done anything to impact health care in a positive way. But under the HIPAA federal regulations, there is guaranteed access to group size that's already defined in federal statutes. We're going to change that size under state law, which is going to change which parts of those groups that under HIPAA currently have guaranteed issues, but it won't under the federal law. That explains the difference.
Well, Mr. Chairman and Mr. Griffin, who cares about the federal law? We're the state. We can do whatever we want to.
Mr. Chairman, that's absolutely correct, and then we end up with confusion in the marketplace that comes about when you have these kinds of things where the federal law and the state law don't agree. And we have that same problem with continuation coverage here in the state where people don't understand when things work and when they don't work, and that's the concern that we're trying to raise.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I'd like to see us actually, might be a shock to Representative Loeffler, but I'd kind of like to see us pass this bill tonight, because the questions we don't have answered tonight, I bet if we pass this, they will be answered very soon. Also, as far as the argument, you know, no other state's done it, so why should we? It kind of reminds me of my E-20 bill. No other state had that, but we did it anyways. It's been the greatest thing since E-10. So I hope the committee supports this bill.
Are there other comments or questions? Representative Murdoch had a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is for the testifiers or Representative Loeffler. I'm a small business owner, and about a year ago we started a group plan in our store and for our employees. And if we go to the 100, you know, 50 to 100, it's going to throw us into a group that's going to have more claims in that pool. And is that going to take my rates up?
Is that going to cost
every small business that goes into that group in a larger pool? Is that going to cost every small business like mine that has a
just anybody that plan? Anybody that leans in, I'll call on.
Well, Mr. Chairman,
Representative
and Representative Burdock, and they can then correct it, or our staff, Tom Pender, who actually is my sidekick on most of these tough insurance questions. But there's a confusion about being in a pool, and my understanding of the small employer provisions is it just says as a small employer you have these rights, and to guarantee issue to have your rates increased and constrained around a certain point, but you're still rated based on your actual claim experience, the age, the health status of the particular group, which is why when you are asking for quotes, they ask you about details about your employees. So it's not quite like being a member of a pool in the quite the same way. And so I think there's sometimes confusion about that. And I think the federal issues on HIPAA deal with renewal, not with about the guaranteed issue that our state law provides. But I'm not an expert on HIPAA either.
Counterpoint, Mr. Johnson?
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, I left the committee with two questions that are not unanswered, and the second one was your question. In other words, by forcing more employers into the current small group rating laws and market, you're bringing in a lot of experience. It's absolutely going to affect the rate. We don't know to what extent. I think there's a good chance there's going to be small employers that are going to get kicked up. Again, remember, that rating band, there's a top and a bottom compression, forces cross-subsidization. Higher costs get pulled down, lower costs get pulled up. Everybody has to fit within the band. And so that's the uncertainty, and you'll not have an answer as you vote on this tonight. It absolutely is going to affect your rate. No one, the proponents, cannot give you the answer what it's going to do to your rate. It will impact it, because if this change is made, the companies selling in that small group market have to compress all that experience to fit now within the bands that are in the 62L.08. So we don't have the answer to that question.
Representative
tonight.
David?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And to Mr. Johnson, I agree with everything you said, but you're not really looking at the flip side here. It will compress it, will bring some folks in, it could raise some rates, but it's also going to get a lot of companies that can get in that can't get in now. If I have 75 employees, and rather than having a 40% increase, I can get that group in there, and I think it's going to create a situation where we have more people that can get insured.
Mr. Chairman, I know we're busy, but if I can just respond to
Representative Davis. Yeah, Mr. Griffin, your final word, and then we're going to move the bill.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Davis, that would be great if we had everybody locked into the system. The problem is that when you start getting to that group size of 100, we're not on the world where we were 30 years ago when a group size of only 5,000 would self-insure. We're now in that world where that group size, if they've got good experience of 100, may decide to self-insure, and we're going to see those groups that are faced with high rate claims going up and that change leave the system. And that's what I'm talking about. That balloon is not a closed system.
Thank you. Representative Lilly renews his motion that House File 2163 as amended be recommended, passed, and referred to the General Register. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed?
No.
Motion prevails. Thank you all very much.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Members.
Representative Junkie, you have, I'll find it, 2130 is Representative Junkie's bill. The chair will move House File 2130 for possible inclusion in the omnibus liquor bill. Representative Junkie, to your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Glad you're still here. We did finish Green Acres tonight, for those of you that are curious. So,
all right.
She'll be coming around pretty soon. Mr. Chair and members, this is an amendment that will go, I assume, in the liquor bill. And I'm proud to be offering it. As I was talking to someone, I chaired the Liquor Subcommittee in 1997, and I try and get something in there every year just for nostalgia reasons. So, members and Mr. Chair, this just clarifies. City of Wilmer brought this to me. They have an ice arena or a civic center with ice sheets on it. This clarifies that when they give a license, they can give a license to sell to an amateur athletic event, i.e. curling out there is where this came up. They are truly amateurs, and it's an amateur event, but they're adults, and it's not clear here on the licensing of it. So the intent of this is to clarify that it was not meant for youth amateur athletic events. But if you have adult amateur athletic events, softball games, curling clubs, other things, that's acceptable. I think that was the intent of the law, but this was a clarification that will make sure that's the case.
Thank you, Representative Junkie. Are there questions for Representative Junkie? If not, the chair will lay over House File 2130 for possible inclusion in the omnibus liquor.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Junkie. Appreciate your time tonight. With that, folks, we are going to turn to the House File 1512, which is the chair's bill on bingo. Representative Lilly, you want to...
Chair Atkins.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I will move that House File 1512 be taken off the table. The
Mr. Chair, I believe we have to just to move it.
Yeah, I'll move House File 1512
as amended. I
recommend that.
I would then,
Mr. Chair, here's the motion that the staff's recommending. Should I go with that?
Yep.
Chair Atkins moves that House File 1512 as amended be recommended to pass and sent to the General Register. With that, we have your bill before us, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would then, just a little background with respect to this bill. We tried to roll this into the Gambling Control Board policy bill. The Senate objected to that, so we were going to have it travel alone. You've already heard the bill, so I won't proceed with any additional testimony. We're just going to go through some procedural things to get the bill in the shape that it should have gone to the General Register, at least according to our friends in the Senate. First, I will move that we reconsider and remove the A3 amendment.
Okay. Any questions with regards to that motion? Seeing none, all in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed?
Next,
that's adopted.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Next, I would move adoption of the new amendment, which is the A4 amendment, and that's in your packet.
Everybody had a chance to take a peek at the A4? Any questions? Seeing none, all in favor say aye.
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 Those opposed?
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
A4 is adopted. We have your bill as amended before us, sir.
Thank you. And key point in there is that there was some, I believe it was Mr. Rockley the other day talked about, that there was possibly some expansion of gaming. This removes the C-Store gas station thing that he objected to, because we want to make sure that we're not talking about an expansion. That was in the amendment, and with that, that's the only change from the other day, and it's moved off on its own, traveling as a separate bill, and I appreciate your support.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So we've heard testimony already, basically. Any questions to the bill as amended? Seeing none. Chair Atkins,
would you like to renew my motion that House File 1512 is intended to be recommended pass and refer to the General Register?
Perfect. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? 1512 is on its way, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Les? Or do you? Representative Les.
What did we just do? 1512. We're going to explain the paper.
Thank you.
Maybe this one will.
Representative Lefsch, welcome back. We have House File 612 before the committee. The chair will move the adoption of the division report. All in favor say aye.
Sure.
Aye. Any opposed? Seeing none, the division report passes. The chair will then move that House File 612 be recommended to pass and refer to the Committee on Local Government and Operations, Technology, and Elections. Apparently is looking for it. Representative Lesh, it's my understanding there's an amendment.
Mr. Chair, on the motion, it was my understanding that it was going to be General Register.
I'll turn to my handy sidekick here, and he'll tell me who they requested. They've requested it, Representative Lesh. I'm not completely certain why. And apparently the Civil Justice Committee has requested it of late as well. So you're a very popular fellow, Representative Lesh.
I'm pleased to be that way, Mr. Chair.
You have an amendment in the, my understanding, you have an author's amendment in the packet, the A1 amendment. Is that your amendment, Representative Lesh?
It is my amendment, Mr. Chair. There's also an A2 amendment.
Okay, well, we'll take them individually. We'll first the A1, that's an author's amendment, put in the shape in which the author desires to proceed. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Seeing none, that prevails. And the A2 amendment, Representative Lesh, is also an author's amendment?
It is, Mr. Chair. But first of all, you know what? I apologize, Mr. Chair. I should have clarified something. On the A1 amendment, which was given to me this afternoon, I reviewed it and found what I appear to be mistakes. So maybe I can clarify that and we can reconsider. Line 1.7 on the A1 amendment, 72 is exchanged for 26. I believe that should be 52. And then when you get on to line 1.10, the 40 is exchanged for 52. That should be 26. Similarly, the same mistakes remain in lines 1.12 and 1.14. This is, Mr. Chair, taking the number of hours. It was standard 1 hour for every 30 hours worked for sick time. We were taking it for large employers, those with over 50, of maxing out at 72 hours per year, and exchanging that to lowering it to 52 instead of 26. Similarly, those where you would max out at 40, we were taking it down to 26 instead of the 52.
Thank you, Representative Lesh. And I apologize for not making sure that we had that in the order that you wanted to move with it. So we'll reconsider the, although Ms. Newman is pausing us for a second. Ms. Newman, do you want to share what your concern is, and then we'll decide whether or not that's where we want to go.
Mr. Chairman and members of the committee,
the thresholds are restructured in this amendment so that employers with fewer than 15 employees would not be covered by this. So a small employer is now one with 15 to 50 employees, and instead of the old 1 hour of sick leave for 30 hours worked, it would go to one for 80. So the maximum then for those small employers would be 26 weeks, or 26 hours per year. The large employers is any employer with more than 50 employees. They would be now paying 1 hour for 40 hours worked for a maximum of 52 hours a year. And that's how the amendment is structured.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. If I may, that's why I asked the question, because the old numbers on there were we're exchanging a high number for large employees for a much lower one, and then for the smaller employers, we're exchanging a lower number for a higher one. But if you assure me that that's correct, then I'll just go with that rather than reconsider.
Well, why don't, Representative Lesch, why don't we do this? Ms. Newman is as good as they come, and we'll have her continue to review it, make sure that it's absolutely what we intended to have occur. And if it's not, I'm sure that she'll notify us at some point during the course of the testimony. So we will leave the A1 amendment on. It's my understanding, unless there's consternation that's raised by Ms. Newman. It's also my understanding, though, you have an A2 amendment. Can you explain what the A2 amendment does?
Absolutely, Mr. Chair. Members, A2 guts the penalties. So anyone who was in opposition really shouldn't be, because it's a hand slap. So no penalty provisions in there on the A2 amendment.
And that perhaps will relieve the requirement or request from the Civil Law Committee.
You would think, Mr. Chair.
That desired to hear it. I'm not so sure about whether or not the local gov operations, technology, and elections folks would still desire to see it or not. But all right, we've got the A2 amendment then, which is an author's amendment before the committee. All in favor say aye. Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed?
No.
The motion prevails. That puts it in the shape, arguably, which the author would like to proceed. Representative Lesch, to your bill, and then we'll take some testimony relative to it.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. We did hear this in the division, so I'll do my best not to duplicate. But essentially, members, 40% of Minnesota workers do not receive paid sick days. And the number one industries where the employees do not receive paid sick days are in the industries where you think you want them, namely the people who prepare your food, the people who take care of your children, and the people who take care of grandma and grandpa in the nursing home. This bill seeks to impose a minimum number of sick days. And the previous bill, I thought, was a reasonable effort to start, but we've even watered it down substantially more, as mentioned by the amendments. What would happen is if you have 15 or fewer employees, you're a small business, or you're automatically exempt. If you have between 15 and 50, you're a small employer under the definitions of statute. Employees receive 1 hour for every 80 hours worked, up to a maximum, as was stated in the A1 amendment, of 26 hours per year that you could aggregate. So as people know, that's slightly over 3 full days that you could get, and you could not carry that over. If you're a large employer, over 50 employees, you get 1 hour for every 40 hours worked, and you can aggregate up to 52 hours in a single year and not carry over any more than that. I would also add, members, that if you're an employer that gives any kind of paid time off, for which could qualify as a sick day under law, meaning that you got to take it this morning, I'm sick, I got to go, then that does in fact qualify as a sick day as well. You don't need to duplicate yourself under the law for this. But with that, I think it'd be better to hear from our testifiers. I have Bernie Hess and Barbara Johnson, I believe.
Thank you, Representative Lesch. Mr. Hess, welcome back to the committee.
Thank you. Good evening, Mr. Chair and Committee. I'm Bernie Hess of the United Food and Commercial Workers, Local 789. It's a union that represents workers in food processing, retail food, and long-term care in Minnesota and Wisconsin, and we've been around for over 100 years. We'd like to thank Representative Lesch for carrying this legislation. We ask your support of House File 612. We believe it's good public policy. There's an old saying in our union that it doesn't cost but pays to belong. We believe this is applicable to Healthy Families, Healthy Workplace Act. By allowing workers to have paid sick days, we believe it will make our food chain safer. When workers aren't forced to work sick, food will be safer for consumers and everybody wins. Nothing can wipe out an industry quicker than a food contamination issue. We have witnessed damage that was laid out lately with the peanut butter industry. And I can also recall a ground beef plant, it was in Nebraska, that suffered a quick death. Closure when it had food contamination problems. It closed. It filed for bankruptcy and the jobs were gone. And alcohol prevention is something I'd like to throw out. We could deliver safer food, healthier workers, and help industries offer consumers a peace of mind when it comes when they know the food chain is safe. So please support this bill, and I can take any questions. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Hess. And I think we're going to hold off on questions for now, just get all the testimony. Ms. Johnson, welcome to the committee.
My name is Barbara Johnson, and I am a member of ISAIAH's Domestic Violence Task Force and also a member of ACORN. And I want to thank the committee and Mr. Chair for listening to my story and how this bill would have helped me, and it will help others. I grew up as a victim of domestic violence, then married an abuser. After years and with help, I was able to leave. I learned about healthy relationships, and I lived through the struggles endured by women in abusive relationships and know the barriers to their escape. When I was leaving the abusive relationship, I was working full-time. I ultimately had to take time off to go to a shelter, get an order for protection, return to my apartment with a police escort to get my belongings and deal with the court systems. I lived paycheck to paycheck, missing even just one day of work put me behind on bills. Often while on my breaks, I had to make phone calls to deal with the fallout of the domestic violence. Sometimes I became so upset that crying I would run to the bathroom, I would have to try to calm myself down so that I could return to work. Sometimes I would be sent home because I wasn't cheerful or happy. I was sad and I was upset. I lost jobs because of this. Now I know that I am far alone in these struggles. Often when I need time to recover from injuries resulting from domestic violence and cannot physically return to work and need additional time to navigate the courts and secure their own safety. Today I'm in a stable place in my life. Thankfully, I no longer have to deal with the abuse. I'm here today speaking about this bill because it would have helped me. And I'm here speaking for all the women who are not able to take that time off from their jobs today to be here. So please support this bill. 612, Healthy Families, Healthy Workplaces Act, so that victims of domestic violence are not further victimized in their paychecks and in their workplaces. Thank you for listening to my story, and I hope that you will decide to support this bill and vote for it. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Ms. Johnson. Appreciate your comments. Representative Lesh, I have a few other folks that have signed up to testify as well. Do you have anybody else? I see Erin Anderson was
Erin
also.
Erin Anderson is on the list. I don't see her right now, Mr. Chair. So
we can call her back.
Thank you.
We've got Robin Schroeder and Karen Cassette. If they're available, come on down. And all you need to do is just identify who we are and proceed with your testimony.
Mr. Chair, Erin Anderson is here now, so...
Okay, well, if you can beat the other two folks here,
okay.
And you all can come on down, too. We'll just take folks as they come. Welcome to the committee, Ms. Anderson.
Hi, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Erin Anderson. I'm the legislative director for Minnesota ACORN, and I'm just here to testify on behalf of Patty Tangi, who unfortunately couldn't make it today. And she is the president-elect of the Business and Professional Women of Minnesota. So I'll just read her testimony. Chair Atkins, members of the committee, thank you for allowing me to participate in this hearing. My name is Patty Tangi. I'm president-elect of Business and Professional Women Minnesota, an organization of 400 women who either own their own businesses or are employed in a wide variety of professions. We are all advocating for stronger businesses that support family-friendly workplace policies.
Our members understand that these are tough economic times for many business owners and managers, including our members. Jobs and layoffs and hiring freezes seem to be the only answer to a healthy bottom line. But we also know that healthy employees can help during these economic tough times. A minimum standard for paid sick days is a step in the right direction. The paid sick days, we support our employees by encouraging them to stay away from the workplace when they are ill. With paid sick days, we support our employees by giving them freedom to stay home with sick kids or parents so they don't bring their anxieties to work. With paid sick days, we support our employees who may feel demoralized for having to choose between family and a paycheck by providing paid sick days. Large businesses have been offering paid sick days for decades. They know the bottom line benefits. They know the bottom line benefits of healthy employees. This still levels the playing field between small and large businesses that compete for the talent from the same labor pool. While we understand there will be short-term costs for providing paid sick days, the long-term, less tangible benefits include increased productivity when workers show up for work healthy, less use of healthcare resources as workers are sick for shorter periods of time, and less workers and children contract diseases in the workplace, and less lawsuits that arise from foodborne outbreaks, and an estimated business savings cost of $11.69 per week per worker from lower turnover, improved productivity, and reduced spread of illness. In San Francisco, a paid sick days law went into effect in February of 2007. There has been no effect or on unemployment, and businesses have not left the area because they must offer paid sick days. There has been no negative effect on business viability. In fact, the number of businesses has increased since paid sick days ordinance went into effect. Thank you for allowing me to testify today on behalf of the members of Business and Professional Women Minnesota.
Thank you, Ms. Anderson. And I'm sorry, you were coming down, Ms. Schroeder and Ms. Cassette. Feel free to approach. I also have Mr. Reinhardt, Mr. Hickey, and Mr. Neuweis on our agenda. You can wait. Just whoever wants to go first is just fine. Just lean into the microphone, tell us who you are, and proceed with your testimony to what.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. My name is Robert Reinhardt. I'm an attorney here in the state. I work with the firm of Dorsey & Whitney, and I've been an employment lawyer for the past 35-plus years. I'm here on behalf of the Minnesota Employment Law Council, which is a group of 15 to 20 of the state's largest employers. Different employers have different perspectives on this bill, and our members respect the concerns of affordability that are raised by smaller employers. But frankly, if the only issue was whether or not the amount of benefit that's mentioned in this bill should be provided, I wouldn't be here, because our members do provide that much and more. When I alerted them to this bill, however, even I was a little bit taken aback by the strength of the response I received. People were very concerned among the bigger employers in the state for the details of this bill and the administrative challenges of this bill. These are multi-state, large employers who have complex and generous benefit plans that include sick leave in one form or another, but not always by that name. And they raised concerns that I've summarized in a single sheet summary, which I have available here, and if it could be distributed, I won't belabor it now. It might be valuable to members not only tonight, but in the future to the extent this bill is considered. Just by way of a quick highlight, the concerns we have are about the mandated accrual formula, which has been amended now, but if there's any specific way to accrue and track the benefit in Minnesota that isn't the same elsewhere, it creates a problem that requires rewriting software, it requires financial adjustments. The carryover provision is troubling and confusing, frankly, because as I read the bill, and I may not understand the intent, but although there's a mandatory carryover, which is not typical of these kinds of plans, there's a provision that says that only the maximum former 72, now I guess 52, our benefit need be provided in a year. So I can't say that I understand what the carryover provision means, but there's been concern expressed about the impact on that on balance sheets and the financial challenge of tracking it. The need to give a credit on rehire is a concern administratively more than anything else. The qualification of people for only 56 hours of work, it doesn't say over what period of time, but that's a very minor track. Usually for family medical leave and other federal and state regulatory purposes, eligibility for leave programs is triggered by 6 or 12 months of service. To have a brushing contact that small would create administrative as well as, frankly, fairness issues. As has been shared with members of the committee, I think, before, and I won't belabor, but it's important, the trend has been decisively towards paid time off provisions. I heard the comments a few moments ago that the bill was not intended to apply inappropriately to that, or was entitled to, in fact, intended to recognize that, but the bill doesn't say anything about that. Paid time off, as I think you probably all are aware, PTO pulls together vacation, personal days off, sick leave, and other days, and takes some of the potential tension out of the employer-employee relationship in a way that both employees and employers appreciate. Employees don't have to be accountable for why they're off or call in and chip about the reason. Employers don't have to worry about trying to track it. But if you have a PTO policy and people use it all at the beginning of the year to go on vacation, and then they say that they're sick and they're entitled to sick leave and they didn't get sick leave, it raises questions that we'd rather not have to wrestle with. These kinds of concerns, in addition to the definitional problems with extended family, is an awfully loose definition, includes anybody who's close enough to be treated like family, just raise questions and administrative headaches. I think any kind of bill like this, if it were to pass, would benefit from some further refinement on these areas, and we frankly question the need to apply it to bigger employers. I've heard informal discussions of the effect that this isn't really designed to be aimed at big employers because there's a recognition that we already give those kind of benefits. If that's so, maybe you could just carve out employers over a certain size based on national employee base. But an employer that's functioning at a national level with an already complex and generous plan is not only burdened by this, but it is provided with a necessary incentive to look again at whether or not it can give a generous PTO plan instead of just go back to the old-fashioned sick leave segregation and provide a less generous plan. So we urge you to try to give closer thought to this bill before it's passed. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Reinhart. Welcome. If you just want to identify who you are and proceed with your testimony.
Mr. Chair, members, Jeremy Estenson, Minnesota Chamber of Commerce. I won't cover anything that Mr. Reinhart did. Our number one concern here is that this bill, well, now the A1 amendment reduced the impact, is still going to have costs, and I'm sure you've seen the numbers. Minnesota's unemployment rate is about 8.1%. Our fear is that the additional costs and burdens might drive that number higher. In December, January, and February, 600 plus thousand jobs were lost per month. And I've got two folks with me here to talk a little bit about their stories. And of course, they didn't have the, nor did we have the privilege, I guess, of seeing the A1 amendment. But I hope we would listen to their testimony and listen to what their concerns are, because certainly they'll still be subject to some of the administrative problems and shifts that Mr. Reinhart went into. And one last thing, Mr. Chair, I believe everyone has in their packet a pamphlet that has the Minnesota Chamber logo at the top. Some of those stories on pages 2 and 3 were crafted by HR folks and company owners on the original bill. But again, nonetheless, there are going to be costs associated with carrying those hours over. And of course, the civil liability that this bill generates gives many of our members pause as well. With that, Mr. Chair, I'll turn it over to the two good chamber members who are here tonight.
Thank you, Mr. Estenson. Welcome.
Thank you, Chairman. My name is Karen Cassette. I'm Chairman of the Board of Lehman's Garage Incorporated. Lehman's has been in business since 1917, and I have been with it only 40 years. So we have 6 repair shops in the South Metro area. We do collision, mechanical, and glass. Our main office is on American Boulevard in Bloomington. Until recently, we employed 115 employees. We're now down to 101. We offer a benefit plan to our employees that includes vacation / personal time. 1 week for 1 year, 2 weeks for 2 years, 3 weeks for 10 years, and 4 weeks for 20 years. In addition to this, after 7 days, we offer short-term disability, which is 80% of their base pay. After 90 days, long-term insurance is offered at a very minimal charge. We also pay half of all of their health insurance, and our employees are happy with this. We have very little sick time. This legislation will require us to cut some of our benefits that we now offer. We employ, an employee would be paid for, I believe it's 6.5 now, it was 9, I think it's down to 6.5 days per year. Our average employee would probably be around $200 a day. So we would need to keep additional records, which we've already talked about, Social Security taxes, and no income would be generated with this because if they're out, they are not producing. So any increased costs that could be could not be absorbed, we would be working with small margins that we already have. It would be increased cost to our operation, such as insurance and taxes. And also, we have an inability to increase our labor rates. We can't do that because the insurance company tells us what they will pay us. So I urge you to vote no on this.
Thank you, Ms. Cassette.
Thank you.
Good evening. Thank you, Chairman, and the members of the committee to allow me to talk. I actually look forward to doing this. This is the first time I actually came out in support or opposition to a bill, so thank you for letting me do this. I'm Robin Schroeder with Schroeder Company. We are a 125-year-old company that is located in Maplewood, Minnesota. And we are a dairy and specialty food manufacturer. So when the gentleman was talking about food, I can understand the concern about safety. We also employ over 225 employees, and we actually have very good pay and benefits also. My concern with this is the additional cost. Now, as Jeremy said earlier, when we came in, obviously the bill had changed since then, so it looks like the cost might be lower, but there's still cost there. And the problem I have with it is in our industry, we have very, very low margins. We also have, most of our customers are national customers, so they have the option of going to multiple manufacturers across the United States. And so if I have additional costs, I cannot pass it on to them. They will not take a price increase because they can go somewhere else and move their volume. And so for us, we would have to take that additional expense and then cut benefits somewhere else. And for us, that would probably be health insurance or our retirement plan. Those are the two areas that we would have to cut. Or we'd have to reduce our jobs. In other words, lay some people off. And we would prefer not to do that because we, our company has had a good reputation, and we realize the employees make our company. And we think we have a great plan and a great benefits and great wages. And we think and feel that the terms of employment should really be dealt with between the employees and the employer, and we think that's where it should be. And especially in this economy when it's hard to just turn a profit anyways, to put an additional expense upon us would be a very burdensome, not just to the company, but to our employees also. Thank you very much, and I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Ms. Schroeder. We appreciate your time. We appreciate your testimony. Mm-hmm. And I think what we'll do is we'll get through all the testimony, and then we'll see what questions or concerns members have. Thank you.
Thank you.
Next up, I have Jen O'Rourke, then Mike Hickey, Buzz Anderson, and Josh Neuweis.
I'll jump in here. Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Jennifer O'Rourke with the League of Minnesota Cities. And we are here in respectful opposition to the legislation before you tonight. To address Representative the fiscal note idea, I know the Association of Minnesota Counties requested a local impact note, and I checked with the request of that information today, and it hadn't been turned in yet, otherwise I would have provided that to committee staff. But we do have concerns about this piece of legislation, particularly on the cost that it will have on the local level for cities and probably counties too. We're very sympathetic to the proponents' desires and situations, but we don't believe that at this time it's the right time to layer this on to what's already going on at the local level with cities. You know, to stand back from this, we've heard a lot this year from both sides of the aisle, in the Senate and the House, give us your mandate relief ideas. Tell us as a state what we can help you do to just help you out at the local level, because we had unallotment in December. We know that both cities and counties will be facing aid cuts later on this year. So looking at something like this, it's a pretty stringent mandate on cities and counties. We do appreciate the amendment, if you will, that would probably limit to this who it would apply to, but we still have several concerns with the bill. Finally, Mr. Chair, if I could just end with One of the real vague parts of the bill, or two of the pretty vague parts of the bill, just deal with preventative care and what that would really mean. It doesn't seem to be super well defined in the bill. And then towards the end of the bill, I think in Section 2, there's an explanation of who would be covered under sick time and who I as an employee could use my sick time for. I think right now in law, I can use that sick time for myself or my kids. I can't use it for my spouse. I can't use it for my grandparents unless my employer specifically allows me to do so. And this bill goes pretty far in the direction of covering all of those other groups as well. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Ms. O'Rourke. Next up, we have Mr. Hickey. Welcome back.
Mr. Chairman, members, Mike Hickey with the National Federation of Independent Business. I'm here to speak in opposition to the bill tonight. I think Representative Ledge has stole a lot of my thunder, though, and so maybe I should mail it in, Mr. Chairman. I don't know. No. So I appreciate him trying to mitigate the effect of the bill.
Mr. Hickey, I think you did. But anyway,
I did. And a lot of it was the original bill, and I wasn't aware of the amendment. But anyways, I want to make a few brief comments. Well, we appreciate the fact he's mitigated the bill. But NFIB is very philosophically opposed to this type of micromanaging by the legislature. We think decisions about the workplace in this area of fringe benefits and what we've known to be fringe benefits should be decided by employers, employees, and the marketplace, not having the legislature putting edicts on the private sector about how to run themselves. Small employers, one of the things many of them pride themselves on is providing tremendously flexible work situations that you can't get at a large business. And some of them are incredibly generous, and longtime employees at certain companies have really benefited from tremendously flexible work situations, being able to be with a child once a week in a certain situation, doing things that you just can't do at a large company where the other employees may not accept it. And the problem, I think, with mandates is that possibly things like that will end, and sometimes people say, well, there's a state standard now. I don't know if we should continue to do what we're doing. A lot of our members do provide sick leave, but as mentioned earlier by one of the other witnesses, more are going to personal days off. And this is a whole new phenomenon. I think it's an advancement in the workplace. Somebody's sick for a few days, there's not somebody looking over their shoulder saying, where's the doctor's excuse, what's going on with you? You get so many personal days per year, and you can use them for however you want. And I think this bill certainly runs contrary to that. And that is actually a progressive trend that's going on in the workplace, and I think it'd be a good one to allow to continue. Finally, we're just really concerned about the alternative uses allowed under this bill. There's a whole laundry list of them, and inevitably what's going to happen is somebody is going to expend a lot of time caring for extended family members, for getting wrapped up in personal situations, and then get really ill and not have sick leave when they reach that point of illness, a hospital stay, a long illness at home, and they're going to have to take their paid vacation, or they're just going to have to tough it out and be sick and not even be paid for it. Inevitably, if you allow this kind of expanded usage of sick leave, this will happen, and it's not a matter of if, it's a matter of when. And so I really urge you not to advance this bill tonight, and the small employers don't need to be micromanaged to this extent, and I'll stop.
Thank you, Mr. Hickey. We appreciate your comments. Mr. Anderson, welcome back.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. My name is Buzz Anderson, and I represent the Minnesota Retailers Association. Thanks for the opportunity to speak. Thanks, Representative Lesch, for offering amendments to make the bill a little less painful. What I've done is I've asked that a poster be passed out. Just for the rest of you to see, one of the services we provide to our members is we provide a poster that shows all the regulations that they have to comply with. This poster has to be in their workplace, and it has to be in a conspicuous place in the break room or wherever where they can see all the benefits and regulations that their employer is supposed to abide by. It's an overwhelming list. And when public policymakers, both at the federal and state level, have these obligations, it doesn't seem like much of an obligation one time, but every little piece of that puzzle that's added ends up becoming overwhelming for a business. Now, this morning, you all heard the same or read the same headlines that I did. IBM laid off 5,000 people. 5.56 million more people applied for unemployment. That's what our concern is. We think that this bill is going to make it more difficult to supply jobs. And we're very proud of the jobs that we provide. If you talk to DTEB, they'll tell you that we are the largest subset of full and part-time employment in the entire state. As an aside to that, we're also the largest collector of sales tax in the state, another service that we provide to the state of Minnesota because of the product that we sell. Again, the poster's been passed out, but our major concern is that this is going to add cost. And we think it's going to add a lot of cost. It's going to also increase absenteeism. We also think it's going to increase our administrative costs. And we think that's tough for both big and small businesses. I had the pleasure this morning of talking to one of my members who started working at a store in Anoka when she was 16. She now owns that store, and she owns four others. She has 265 employees. Some of those employees, she talks about, well, all of them she talks about with great affection, but she has a group of them that she really is very close to. They're in the Anoka store. She's had this same morning crew for the last 20 years. They don't have sick leave benefits, but they've been there and stayed there for 20 years. She gives them time off whenever they need time off. And it's a great employer-employee relationship. Again, we're concerned about the unintended consequences of costing jobs, and we think hurting both large and small businesses. So that, I'll stand for questions, and thank you for the opportunity to speak.
Thank you, Mr. Anderson. We appreciate your testimony. I also have Mr. Neuweis. I'm sorry, and I have all my little handwritten scribbles all over here. You were actually higher on the list, so I appreciate your patience.
Oh, sure, no problem. Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members. My name is Josh Whitney Wise. I'm with SEIU, and I'm here on behalf of child care providers. I'm actually glad that the last testimony you're going to hear is in support of the bill. SEIU represents child care providers, and when a parent who does not have time off to take care for their kid sends their kid to child care, that infects everyone in the child care. Not only does it infect the children, when the parents pick them up, they get infected as well. That accounts for a lot of lost productivity, as well as, you know, just being overall bad for public health. It's not hard to see how one child getting sick and going to child care, for lack of a better word, goes viral. So that's our position on it, and I'll end there and be brief.
Thank you, Mr. Whitney Weiss, and I apologize for being unable to read handwriting very well. So, questions or comments from members of the committee, Representative Hopkins?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have a procedural technical question. Where was, when the motion was made, where are we sending this?
It was, the motion was to local gov, and it somewhat depends on what's in the bill at the end. We've got some amendments that have been floating around. Representative Lesch, to that issue?
I do have a couple of amendments, Mr. Chair. I did have conversations with...
Can you pull the microphone down a little bit?
Thank you.
Thank you.
This, with the amendment, it was my understanding that this would not need to go to civil law because we gutted the penalties provision, but apparently there were a couple more lines we'll need to do in order to keep that clean. I also wanted to remove the section that would require the local government path. So with that, I would like to, if I could, Mr. Chair, permit me to make a motion to delete lines 5.9 to 5.13, and also the remainder of the section after that that was not deleted on the civil law provisions, which is subdivision 8. And the lines of subdivision 8, which were already taken out, were 5.32 below. This would merely remove the remainder 5.14 to 5.32, the remainder of those enforcement provisions.
All right. And we have a tradition of always taking author's amendments. Just read along with me, Representative Lesch. The chair will then move that lines 5.9 through 5.13, as well as that essentially be lines 5.14 through 5.32 be deleted.
That's correct, Mr. Chair.
And Representative Lesch, just so we're clear, that would to take out the balance of subdivision 8 would include lines 6.1 and 6.2.
That's
as
correct,
well.
Sure.
Ms. Newman, am I following?
We, Mr. Chair, we removed that with the first
I believe that we did. Did we, Ms. Newman, did we remove that with the A1 amendment that we, or the A2? Let's do this, Representative Less, just so that we're absolutely clear. I'm going to withdraw that motion. The motion is going to be to remove lines 5.9 through 5.13 and to remove all of Subdivision 8.
Perfect, Mr. Chair.
All in favor say aye.
Aye, aye. Sir.
Any opposed? That motion carries. Then we have Representative Davis on the list next.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. To Representative Lesh, have we done anything for the local governments at all by any of these amendments to take them out or anything?
Representative Lesh?
I'm sorry, I didn't hear the last part, Representative Davis.
Mr. Chairman and Representative Lesh, have we done anything to address the concerns of the folks from the League of Cities to remove government from this bill, or are they still in there?
Representative Lesh? Mr. Chair and Representative Davis, it would still apply to the extent it applies at all. I would note that with the way this bill was handled with the substantial amendment, we're talking about 1 hour. Well, first of all, you have to reach 56 hours in order for it to qualify, and we're talking 1 hour for 80 for the small employers. If the large, if the local government has over 50 employees and they're not already offering the sick time, they would get 1 hour for every 40. So it would still impact them.
Thank you, Representative Lesh. Mr. Chairman, if the testifier from Minnesota Acorn could come forward, I'd like to ask just a couple real quick questions.
Okay. Ms. Anderson? Why don't you both come on down? We'll see who they...
Lady.
We have Ms. Johnson and Ms. Anderson. Representative Davis, just address to whomever.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. To Ms. Anderson, does Minnesota Acorn provide these benefits now? And if so, at what level?
Ms. Anderson?
To our full-time employees, yes, we do. Right now, we have all full-time employees. I don't have the HR handbook in front of me, but I know that I do receive at least 5 paid sick days, I believe.
Well, Mr. Chairman, and Ms. Anderson, maybe you didn't understand the question. The question was, at the level that this bill would provide the sick leave, does ACORN currently get that level of sick leave?
Absolutely.
Ms. Anderson, Representative Davis?
Well, that is just begs the question for me, is then why do you want it if you already have it, would be my question. But a couple things here, maybe a couple comments. Any of these groups can offer these benefits now. There's nothing saying that any group on this support list is unable to do it right now. And then to hear that we're modeling after San Francisco kind of doesn't help me a lot here. I'm extremely concerned about a couple things on this bill. First of all, with what we're going to do in the next 7 weeks to local governments, and then to put an additional mandate on them is just the wrong thing to do at the wrong time. We're going to whack them big time, and now we're whacking them again. I got a call yesterday from an employer in District 31B, and he put it right on the table. He said, if you pass that bill, I am cutting jobs. He says, I am cutting jobs. So we're supposed to be trying to help people get jobs. We're losing so many jobs. We're bleeding. We have to stop the bleeding. And this continues the bleeding. This doesn't just rip the Band-Aid off. This rips the whatever off. Members, I hope this committee, I hope we're paying very close attention to what we're looking at doing here. There's not one group on the organizational support list that isn't able to provide these benefits right now. This is going to increase cost to government, it's going to increase cost to our employers, and it's going to cut jobs in the district that I'm so proud to represent. This is a bill that we need to vote down, and Mr. Chairman, I'd like to respectfully request a roll call.
Thank you, Representative Davis. Other comments or questions? Representative Murdoch?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I notice on the amendment here you've changed, in a good way for, small business like mine. I have 8 employees. But I still think I have employees in Perham, Otter Tail, New York Mills, Wadena, that do have 15 employees. And I really think this is going to get after them in an added expense. I have a 17, might be a child labor law thing there, but anyway, he's 17. too many lawyers. There's too many lawyers in there. Anyway, but I'm going to have to, well, being under 15, but employers that have high school students, they're going to be looking at vacation for them. And I don't know if they need vacation. They get a whole 3 months off in the summertime. That's just my point. It's going to get after small business even at 15.
Mr. Chairman. Representative David, if you get one last comment, then we'll take Representative Lesh's final comment, and we'll take a vote on
it. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I understand that this bill is not moving the Senate at all, so my blood pressure got way up there for nothing. I'll withdraw my request for roll call.
Thank you, Representative David. Representative Lesh, anything further?
Thank you. I would, just if I can, Mr. Chair, there's a lot of hyperbole circling around this bill earlier on, and the testimony we heard from businesses that came up in the division were that you count up all your employee hours and you divide by 30 and multiply it by the average pay, and that's your cost. And it was completely wrong. It's bad math. It's fuzzy math, I guess, as we call it. The only way that works is if your employees work full-time 52 weeks a year and you don't give them sick leave. And if that's the case, that's the way you want to pull it, I don't have a lot of sympathy. I would note under 3.23 to 3.26, if you got a policy that makes an available amount of paid leave, like Ms. Cassette has for her employees, it doesn't apply to you. And for the employers that came up and say, we have a personal relationship with our employees and we give them time off when they need it, it doesn't apply to them. I mean, they've got that. They're already giving it to folks. So the time is there. And we're not looking at going after those folks. Primarily who we're looking at hitting are the bad actors who you didn't see up here testifying in opposition for obvious reasons. It's difficult to get up here and say, I run a sweatshop preparing your food or taking care of your kids, and I'm not giving my people sick leave. That said, Mr. Chair, based on the amendments and based on what we're doing, for example, a person that has a summer job, if you're working 10 hours a week for 6 weeks or for 8 weeks throughout the summer, or even 12 weeks throughout the summer, the amount of time, and I can't do the math quickly, but it's a very, very small amount of time, Mr. Chair. With that, I would ask, considering we've removed the provisions, I would ask the author if he would revise his motion to send it to the General Register. If we do have a request from another chair to do that, I can have a conversation with that chair, Mr. Chair.
Just to where it's going, Representative Hoppe?
Yeah, Mr. Chair, I was wondering this before. Has this bill already been, or is it going to go to one of the health committees?
Representative Lesh, has it been requested by a health committee?
It is not, Mr. Chair. No.
Well, we heard testimony tonight. It's a public health issue.
Fair enough.
We should send it to them.
And Representative Lesh, I assume you will honor any request of any chair that desires to see it. The chair will renew his motion that House File 612 be recommended to pass, and with the changes that have been made, to refer to the General Register. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed?
No.
The motion prevails. For the record, it should be noted that that was as amended. On which we were voting. Representative Dabney, my deepest apologies. I promised that you'd be on between 6 and 6:30, and I... 6:30
somewhere.
I was, yes, at 6:30, I think, off in Montana or somewhere, Representative Dabney, but I was off testifying somewhere else, and I missed our window. But Representative Dabney moves the division report for House File 1214. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Seeing none, that motion prevails. Representative Dabney will then rule that House File 1214 be recommended to pass and referred to the Committee on Civil Justice. Is that
correct, Mr. Chair.
Representative Dabney, to your bill.
Mr. Chair, first of all, no apologies necessary, but thank you for the kind words. Secondly, I have an oral amendment, and that would be to delete Section 3 of the bill.
Reference the page, please.
Chair. The photocopying is a little funky here. Starting on page 2, line 22, and going quite a ways to page 7, line 9, if I'm correct.
Did you say section 3? I believe that goes, on page 7 to line page 7, line 9. Is everybody clear in terms of what the motion is? All right. Representative Dabney's motion is to delete Section 3. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Seeing none, the motion prevails. Representative Dabney, you're real.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. The significance of the oral amendment that we just approved is it takes out the most controversial parts of the bill by a long shot, the notice requirements related to contract for deed transactions. Section 1, and Mr. Elwood is here to correct me as I make errors, but Section 1 now does clarify a few issues of responsibility in the case of a contract for deed transaction. If there's outstanding taxes to be paid, they have to be paid by the vendor, I believe is the language, things to that effect. Section 2, that was Section 2, pardon me. Section 4 continues to have language regarding rent to own. There are concerns, at least from the Bar Association, and I believe the realtors as well, on this language, but there is a commitment from all parties to continue to work on that, and I think there's some optimism that agreement can be found on that. The retailers are here to testify. The representative from the Bar Association was unable to stay, but we were clear that there is a commitment to continue to work. Perhaps you'd like, at this point, Mr. Chair, to allow Mr. Elwood to make whatever comments he sees fit.
Absolutely. Mr. Elwood, welcome back to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Ron Elwood with Legal Aid. Not much to add. I'll stand for questions. I'll be here for questions. Just want to reiterate that I appreciate the cooperation of the Realtors Association and the Bar Association folks who have been kind enough to commit to work with us to get this in the shape that that it needs to be.
Thank you, Mr. Elwood. There are other folks there to testify. Come on down. You just identify yourself for the record and proceed with the testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Christine Berger, and I represent the 20,000 members of the Minnesota Association of Realtors. And we'd first of all like to thank the author of the bill for taking out Section 3. We had some concerns with the methodology and the procedures in that section, and so very grateful for the removal of that section. And then, yes, it is true, we have some concerns with Section 4, and the real property section of the Minnesota Bar has authorized me to say they had some really strong objections with Section 4, some concerns. And so we have all agreed to work together to on a compromise that will definitely appease the masses. So anyway, please thank you for the opportunity to testify tonight.
Thank you, Ms. Berger. We appreciate your testimony. Is there anyone else desires to be heard with respect to the bill? If not, questions or comments from members of the committee in light of the amendment? If not, Representative Dabney will renew his motion that House File 1214 be recommended pass and refer to the Committee on Civil Justice. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
As amended. Any opposed?
No.
Motion prevails. Thank you, Representative Dabney.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members.
I believe, folks, that there's two bills left.
Aye.
Thank you, Representative David. Now we stand adjourned. Oh. Let me just... Yeah, I always feel bad for the nice people that come and ask me to carry their bills for them because they have to wait till the very end of the meeting to have them heard. But
Chair Atkins.
Mr. Chair, I'll move the House File 2138 be recommended passed and referred to the General Register. There is an author's amendment to put it in the shape that I'd like to proceed with it. That's the A1 amendment. I appreciate your support.
Thank you, Chair Atkins. Does everybody have a copy of the A? They're passing it out. Why don't I think they've had an opportunity. It looks like it's a date change. And
that's all it is. Is it just changes from December 31, 2009 to June 30, 2010. And I believe that everybody's now got it in their hands, so I'd appreciate your support.
Chair Atkins has moved the A1 amendment. Any questions regards to the amendment? Excuse me. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Amendment adopted, sir. You have your bill as amended.
Mr. Chair and members, you actually already heard the bill. It was before us. Representative Thiessen incorporated it into his bill. The department brought it to me. They call it the Mini Cobra extension, and it just allows us to match up with federal law so that folks can continue to get Cobra coverage during a period which otherwise would be a gap. So unless you want to hear the bill again, I just appreciate your support of the bill.
Aye.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I'll renew my motion that House File 2138 is amended to be recommended passed and referred to the General Register.
All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Adopted. You're on your...
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Next
second.
Up, Mr. Chair, we have House File 1476, which I would recommend it pass and refer to the General Register.
Thank you, Chair Atkins. I understand there's an amendment, sir. We have your...
There is, Mr. Chair, and I'm just pulling it out. This is an author's amendment. This is going to serve as the omnibus liquor bill. You've already heard all of the bills that are contained in the omnibus liquor bill. I will go through them fairly rapidly just so that you can follow along quickly and see the ones that have been included. Then there's a couple that have not been included I want to point out to you so that you're aware that they're not in the bill. Section 1 is Representative Zeller's House File 1510, as is Section 2. This is for the non-commercial alcohol use provision in a at public facilities. It just clarifies that. And Section 3 is Representative Solberg's bill with regard to a convention center in his district. Section 4 is Representative Junkie's House File 2130. You just heard that bill tonight. That's clarifying that at amateur sports events where you've got older than 18-year-old participants, older than 18 years and older, they aren't going to be able to be served, but that you can actually serve beer at those events. Section 5 is Representative Reiner's bill so that we can have beer at the UMD Bulldog hockey games at the deck. Section 6 is Representative Simon's bill and my bill. It's to allow for lock cases. You recall Representative Simon had an example of the lock case that would allow people to use that to transport liquor in a safe way. Section 7, again, is Representative Zeller's bill, that provision relative to public facilities. Section 8 is Representative Kahn's direct wine shipment, not Sunday sales. I saw suddenly we got people looking up. It was not the Sunday sale provision. Section 9 is Representative Dabney's wine tastings in establishments with liquor licenses. Also, it's my understanding, and we'll take it up here momentarily, that Representative Simon has an amendment to allow for tastings at BFWs and the like. Section 10, it took us an awful lot to put in the Representative Zeller's bill. That also is regarding public facilities. Section 11 is Representative Kahn's bill for on-sale liquor license at Augsburg. Section 12 will allow two liquor licenses for a hotel in Grand Marais. That was Representative Dill's bill. With that, Mr. Chair, what I'd like to do is take Representative Simon's amendment relative to the VFWs, and then I'll go through and talk about why certain bills were included and others were not, and then we'll hopefully have a chance to vote on it.
Representative Simon.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd like to move the A1 amendment.
Aye.
Chair Atkins. Aye. Representative Simon has moved the A1. Everybody have a copy? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Representative Simon, do you want to say something about your amendment?
Better. This just allows liquor stores to do wine tastings in clubs, including VFWs and American Legion.
Well said. Chair Atkins, to your bill, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And that, obviously, that's the essence of what's been included in the bill. There were two bills that we heard notable for the fact that they were not included in the bill. One is relative to Sunday sales. And quite frankly, what I do is I just sort of listen to members on the committee. I listen to other folks that want to be heard. And I think there's an intrigue or an interest, but not what I'd label support, and certainly a heavy level of controversy relative to it, even among some of the owners of the liquor stores themselves. And what I'd suggest that they do is that they continue to visit among themselves, that they continue to visit with us and talk about if there's some common ground between the owners themselves about what are family days. Maybe there's a period of time of the year or certain holidays or something that they might be willing to stay open on Sundays and that everybody could support. That is the reason that component of or that bill was not included in the omnibus bill. It also is not in the Senate version of the bill, and therefore it did not seem prudent to put it in to what is hopefully going to be a relatively uncontroversial House omnibus bill, particularly in light of the fact that we've got multiple authors that are hoping to get this bill passed so that they can serve the needs of folks in their own communities. I should also note that one of the bills that was Representative Zeller's was at the airport, one of the sections there. I talked about it being public facilities. You heard that airport bill. Another bill that was not included at this point was the Trader Joe's store at, I believe it's Lindale and 22nd. My primary reason for not including that was at this point, what we've traditionally had with the city of Minneapolis and other cities that seek for things to come through the omnibus House liquor bill or the Senate bill for that matter, is that they take a formal approach. They request of us that it be placed in the omnibus liquor bill. I believe it's just a timing issue with the city of Minneapolis, but I didn't want to get ahead of them and get sideways with any local municipality. So we're going to give them an opportunity to go through whatever process they go through. If they formally decide that they'd like it to be in the omnibus liquor bill, even though we just got this bill introduced on Tuesday, I think it was, and we heard it like that afternoon, which I appreciate your indulgence in hearing it on such short notice, I wanted to hear that bill in the event that the city of Minneapolis actually takes the formal action of desiring to support the bill. We'll see if it's the kind of thing that sets the world on fire or not, but I'd rather not put it into a bill and then find out afterwards that we've, you know, exploded some sort of nuclear device in the bill. So it's not in the bill as it stands, and with that, I would be happy to stand for any questions that people may have with respect to the proposed omnibus bill.
Thank you, Chair.
I should make one note, Mr. Chair. I believe that there is one difference between the Senate bill and ours at this point, and that is that they have the University of Minnesota's or a request that alcohol, beer, whatever, be served in all parts. There are three differences. Let's go to Mr. McCormick, Mr. Chair, just so that we have absolute clarity as to what the differences are, and then we can vote on the bill.
Mr. Chairman, I never contradict my chair, but we have two sections of in our bill that came in after the Senate closed theirs, and that's the wine tasting provision and the youth provision. And then we also have slightly different convention center language because we limited ours to the outstate non-seven county metro area. Those are the three differences in our bill, and then they on the Senate side have the Gophers provision. So that'd be four provisions.
So one big provision in four parts. I don't know. So anyway, those are the differences. Thank you, Mr. McCormick. I appreciate the help.
The Senate bill has some appeal, I understand.
It's got Representative Lilly's bill in it, which wasn't included in this one, and I'm very, very sorry.
Representative Zeller.
Well, and thank you, Mr. Chair, and I do appreciate the discussion on the bills that aren't in there. I know going forward we'll, depending on this consensus from the stakeholders, because I know personally that was quite the odd night where Representative Kahn was defending the tenets of capitalism here in Minnesota and America, but... And I do appreciate you putting in a bipartisan bill, because I do think we'll want to see it happen, help it get passed as cleanly as possible. And on behalf of good family relations at home, thank you for putting in the airport provision, Mr. Chairman.
We want to take care of that mother-in-law, Representative Zeller.
Chair Atkins.
Mr. Chair, that's all I've got. If there's any other questions or concerns, otherwise I'd renew my motion that House File 1476, now as amended, be recommended, passed, and referred to the General Register.
Chair Atkins has renewed his motion. Any questions? Seeing none, all in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Your bill is passed. Chair Atkins.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think that concludes our agenda. Quick roadmap. We've got second deadlines coming up. I think Tuesday we're going to have a number of bills. Thursday, hopefully, will be a little bit lighter, and then we'll just do wrap-up work on that following Tuesday on the very last day of deadline. If there's any questions that come up as we go, just let me know. Otherwise, we'll get all the bills to you just as, with as much notice as we possibly can. And with that, we stand
adjourned.